Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 106 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levitstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. We go through two cons worth of material here as we cover Mocha and C2E2. C2E2 a little bit more in depth than Mocha, but Mocha, we still have a couple of interviews, so go ahead and check it all out. And we're back to regular Comic Timing talk on 107. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levitstein, and welcome to episode 106 of Comic Timing. And yeah, there is still some convention talk left to do here after we were done with the CGS Super Show last episode. This time, I was able to attend Mocha this year. I usually do. And C2E2. And it was the first time that C2E2 took place. So plenty of great interviews to be had there with some creators that I don't usually get a chance to talk to, and some that you've heard of the show before. We are actually getting back to a regular release schedule here. Episode 107 is going to be the Review Corner episode. Not that many books this time, only three, because, well, only three came out. And no independents, amusingly enough, because I don't think any of them are really out yet. So we do, if memory serves, two DCs and a Marvel, if I remember correctly. So, yeah, that's the episode that's coming out hopefully next week, episode 107. It's already been recorded, so once Brent puts the finishing touches on it, then Brent will release it, and 107 will be out to the masses. And this 106 here is jam-packed with all the stuff that happened to Mocha and C2E2. I'm going to talk a little bit about my C2E2 experience for you guys before we get into the episode. But before that, actually a huge announcement here for Comic Timing listeners. And yeah, it's pretty big. In fact, probably the biggest news that we've had on Comic Timing in quite some time. We got ourselves a new sponsor for the show, and it is one that, you know, might take you guys for a little bit of a loop, but not really for me too much, because, well, they are a damn good company. And welcome to Comic Timing. DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service, is the new sponsor of Comic Timing. Now, they've been around for ages now, and they've been providing discount comic books to the masses for quite some time now. And they're doing that here for Comic Timing listeners. In fact, for any of you folks who have not tried DCBS yet, you're going to have a wonderful coupon code to use with DCBS for your first time. If you use the coupon code CT8, that's CT and the number 8, you will get 8% off on your first order with DCBS. Great discount there on top of the 75% discounts on a bunch of books and 50% discounts on a bunch of books, which is really, really nice to see. And we're continuing the review corners with DCBS. That's not going to change. This month, the review corners are as follows. We have Superman number 701. This is the first issue by J. Michael Straczynski on the Superman titles with art by Eddie Barrows. And this one is $1.79 on DCBS, regular price of $2.99. So nice 40% discount on the book. JMS begins his run with DC here. He's done Brave and the Bold before, but it's a major change to go to the big two of DC. Well, two of the big three, Wonder Woman and Superman. And we figure we go with Superman on this one. And Eddie Barrows has done Superman before, but didn't actually do a Superman book while Superman was in the title. If you remember correctly, I believe the last time that he did Superman was during the Action Comics run when that first started. So it's going to be pretty cool to see him actually on the book. And I'm wondering what's really going to happen with JMS's run, whether it's going to be a very different Superman or a traditional take on him. And the covers are by John Cassaday, the first DC work that I've seen Cassaday do in quite some time. So pretty cool. Check it out. That's the DC pick. The Marvel pick is going to be X-Men number 1, which is 75% off with DCBS. You're only paying 99 cents for this first issue here. It's written by Victor Gishler, penciled by Paco Medina. Victor Gishler is new to Marvel as well. Not really that much on his resume. However, this is going to be a vampire story kicking off here with the X-Men, and that's going to lead into our indie pick, actually. But yeah, I'm curious to see where this is going to go, because vampires have had a history with the X-Men, but not really too much in the past couple of years. And I'm wondering whether any X-Men are going to wind up turning in this, because some of the promo art showed a vampire Jubilee. I'm hoping she doesn't stay vampire, because, damn it, I like Jubilee. I like her in human form. I don't want to see her winding up a vampire for the rest of her days, and there will be a lot of them if she's a vampire when she gets staked. But yeah, a variant cover available on this one for John Romita Jr., but the regular cover, like I said, 99 cents on DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service. And the independent pick is out of IDW, and this is actually in honor of the return of one of my favorite HBO shows, and it now has a comic book to go along with it. It is True Blood number one. This one is a 50% off discount here on DCBS for $1.99. It's written by Alan Ball, along with some other writers like David Tishman of Bite Club, and Mariah Huner is the artist. And wash art by David Messina as well. So, excuse me, my mistake. Huner is one of the co-writers. So there you go. Huner is the co-writer, and David Messina is doing the art. He did the art on Star Trek Countdown before this. And looks like this one's going to be plotted by Alan Ball, but written by Tishman and Huner. So we'll see how this goes. It's a side story, not necessarily involved with what's going on with the third season of True Blood. However, I like True Blood, and I'm willing to give this a shot and see if this is more up my alley here. Sometimes the stuff coming out of properties that have been, you know, basically transferred over to comic books aren't nearly as good as the original, but we'll see what True Blood does here. So I'm willing to give it a shot. $1.99 on DCBS. And once again, if you use the promo code CT8, you will get 8% off on your first order with Discount Comic Book Service. So welcome, DCBS, and thank you to DCBS as well, because they didn't have to give us a sponsorship, but they did, and that makes me very, very happy. So check it out at dcbservice.com for all of your comic book needs. And on top of that, speaking of DCBS, make sure to order your copy of Agents of Cult Volume 1, Recipe for Destruction. This is the new PKD Media trade paperback out this month. Read the adventures of Commander Milo and his Agents of Cult assault team, along with the action-packed outer space excitement of Black's Danger in Space. If you enjoy classic cartoons such as G.I. Joe and Flash Gordon, then this is what you need. Written by award-winning writer Sean Pryor and featuring the artist extraordinaire Andrew Charapar, this book is 72 pages of fun for all ages at the nice price of $6.99. Every customer that orders a copy of Agents of Cult Volume 1 Recipe for Destruction will receive a free head sketch by cult artist Andrew Charapar, and it is available for pre-order at DCBS. So go ahead and pre-order your copy and make Sean Pryor happy, because I like seeing this man happy. When he's sad or when he's angry, you don't want to be around this guy, okay? All right? He will mess you up. Seriously. No question. I mean, you bring up Superman Returns to him, and you're going to get punched, okay? You don't order Agents of Cult, you're going to get punched. Maybe not by him, maybe by me, but come on. Do the man a favor. This is $7 here, and do me a favor and give this a shot, because while this does not have Dr. Levenstein like the previous one, Mercury and the Murd, it's still damn good, and Andrew Charabar also deserves your support, because this man is fantastic on art. Some of the best unappreciated art out there, no question. So go and get Agents of Cult Volume 1 Recipe for Destruction, add it to your cart, and hey, take advantage of that 8%. That's going to mostly pay for this if you order enough. Yippee-ki-yay, right? All right, so I'm going to talk a bit about C2E2, and then we'll get into the main part of the episode, which is Mocha and C2E2. This was my first time in Chicago, and we took full advantage of that. I came in on Tuesday with my girl, Chris, who you'll hear a little bit on the episode, and we wound up getting in pretty early on Tuesday, about noonish, so that we then immediately took a nap afterwards. Didn't go into Midway. We wound up going through O'Hare, which wound up not nearly as bad as people talk about it. I mean, it's right by the Blue Line, so you know it's easy to just get on the train and then take it into the city, which is good. I like being near a subway; it makes me feel at home. And I'm not talking about a restaurant, I'm talking about a place that can actually take you places. And this is exactly what we had here. So, you know, nice and simple, got into the downtown pretty easy, got to the Essex Hotel, which is where we were staying, took a little bit of a nap, then went for a tour of the city, basically. And we went to like Millennium Park and a couple of the other places around there. We went to what is now a Macy's. And I hate calling Marshall Field's a Macy's, but that's what it is, sadly enough. And, you know, we took a look in there, took a look at the chocolates and drooled over them, and went to a couple of the statues in Millennium Park and took some pictures. And if you want to check them out, if you're Facebook friends with me, they're all over there. And a bunch of them are going to wind up on my Flickr account also at some point, which is actually linked directly from the Comic Timing site. So if you want to check them out, go ahead. And, yeah, that was our first day, you know, sort of low-key. We wound up, I forget where we actually wound up eating that night, but it was good food. Then next day, we actually went to Wrigley and went to a Cubs game. Went to see the Cubs take on the Brewers. So, you know, two bad teams fighting it out. Come on, it's true. What can I say? This year, the Brewers are still the Brewers and the Cubs are still the Cubs. Not much has changed, but Wrigley Field is gorgeous. I mean, seriously, if you have not seen Wrigley before, if you've never actually been to a game at Wrigley, this is a place you need to go to before it's gone. And I doubt it's going to be gone anytime soon. I mean, it'll probably be around for at least another 10 years, maybe 15 years, because they're keeping it up well. And, you know, like Fenway, they keep doing repairs to it and making it better. There's a picnic area on the tier now where it doesn't actually face the field or anything, but it's a nice place to sit down if you want to relax for a bit and maybe get a bison dog, which is what I wound up getting. Ooh, buffalo hot dogs. Yummy. And yeah, got Chicago hot dogs. That's where I went to eat on Tuesday. We went to get Chicago dogs. That was tasty. Oh yeah, if you've ever been to Nathan's on the East Coast in New York, this is probably the best thing, the closest thing to that in the mid-coast or the third coast, if you want to listen to Chris Niesman. And yeah, that's what we wound up doing on Wednesday. After we went to the game, we just basically toured Wrigleyville, went to Chicago Comics, which is one of the comic shops in the area, and checked that out. And yeah, it was a nice store. You know, didn't really buy too much because I'm going to a convention later in the week, so why would I bother spending money there? But still, nice place to visit, and I'm sure if I'm ever there again, I'll probably wind up buying something. Yeah, headed back home after that and relaxed. Thursday, we wound up hanging out with Niesman and the boys after we went to the Museum of Science and Industry, which, if you've ever been to the Liberty Science Center in Jersey, it's a little bit like that. You know, it's a science museum. You know, it's really, really nice. It's huge, too, on the inside. It's not like a TARDIS. It's not bigger on the inside than it is on the outside, but it's the type of place where you're going to have to go multiple times in order to actually see everything. But the exhibits they had were, you know, very hands-on. You know, you got to touch things, and, you know, there wasn't a guard telling you not to go near anything, you know, not being shooed away. A very hands-on experience. They have this great train on display. It's actually the Zephyr, the first stainless steel streamlined locomotive that they wound up using on United States rails. And that was actually in use until, I believe, 1960-something, thereabouts. And then it was donated to the museum, and it's been there ever since. It's been on display, and we got the tour of it. Very, very cool. I got to go inside of an old United Airlines airplane as well as a part of the exhibits, and they had some stuff on the human body that was pretty interesting, and we got to make some typhoon waves, which was pretty sweet. And yeah, no, it was just a nice, fun time, and took a walk through Jackson Park afterwards and saw the Japanese Garden and the statue from the Columbian exhibition, which I believe was actually part of the Chicago World's Fair back in 1893, if memory serves. Might have been 96, but it's gorgeous. I mean, this statue, if you're there at the right time of day, I'm pretty sure it's a bronze statue, but, you know, it looks gold because that's the color of it, and it glistens in the sun. You know, you're going to get some shots here that look like they're, like, straight out of, like an old, like, Roman movie or something like that, you know. But it's a great place to go to if you really want to. And then that night we went with Niesman, Wood, and David Price and a couple of the other people that they're hanging out with, and we went to get some barbecue in Niesman's neck of the woods. So that was a lot of fun and had a great time. And afterwards we went to Challengers Comics for a bit for their pre-con party. Got to meet Doug Monge real quick and Christian Alame and a couple of other people, and hobnob with John Suntress for a little while, and Then off we went back home, well, back to the hotel, that is, back to the Essex, and woke up the next day for the first day of the con, and the con went swimmingly. I mean, it's laid out a lot like New York Comic Con is, and I explain this a little bit more in episode 107, but just to, you know, briefly go through it, it's, you know, bigger aisles, it's a huge convention, it's one of the biggest convention centers, actually it is the biggest convention center in the United States, period, bigger than San Diego. You know, bigger than New York, bigger than Baltimore, bigger than anywhere. That's what you have here. And they used the space at McCormick pretty damn well. You know, there was no chance that you were going to be cut off during this. The only problem is that because it was so big, you didn't even realize how many people were there. Like, it felt like it was underattended. And yet, the attendance at the end was pretty much what they were expecting it to be. I forget offhand what it was, but it was at least 65, 70,000 thereabouts. So they did a good job at C2E2. Some people weren't nearly as happy with the turnout as others. I know that depending on the artist or writer, they might have gotten more business than others, but that happens at any convention, you know? And it's a first-year con, too, you know, because the word of mouth is going to spread. And hopefully that's what's going to happen here. They had a podcast arena here as well. I didn't partake in it, but Raging Bullets were there, and around comics, Social 11 O'Clock Comics were set up, and so was iFanboy and a couple of others, which was nice. And Sean and Jim got to hang out there all weekend and, you know, go to the panels and stuff. I went to a couple panels myself. In fact, if you want my wrap-up of the DC editorial panel and a couple of the other ones that I went to, listen to Raging Bullets, one of the most recent episodes that came out. I believe it is episode 206 I was on, talking with Sean and Jim all about that. And it was a nice, typical, 4-hour episode of Raging Bullets. We wound up splitting it up into two parts. I think the other part's going to air on 208 of theirs. But 206 and 208, I'm on that. Sean and Jim were on this episode for a little bit also, but for about 20 minutes. I was talking to them, you know, just on the floor of C2E2, getting ready and enjoying stuff. The four on Friday was not nearly as packed as, you know, some people would have thought, like I said, but it was a decent amount of people. It was a nice Friday crowd, you know? Fridays are always the lesser of the three, and you could tell that there were plenty of people that were probably getting off work and coming and checking it out and then leaving. And Saturday, much more busy, much more packed, you know, more foot traffic, and yet still, you could still walk around, which is always a bonus. And the story that I want to tell real quick here, that wound up happening Friday, right before things wrapped up. I forget if I told us on 107, so again, if I did, I apologize if I'm repeating myself here, but then again, this is airing before 107, so if anything, you just have to hear me say it again on 107. But they wound up sending out a text message, because I wound up signing up for this DC mailing list, which basically they text message you whenever something goes up on the source, which is pretty cool. There was also a contest going on where you could win a copy of Wednesday Comics, the collected edition. So I signed up for both of those. And then end of the day, Friday comes, and I get a text message saying, congratulations, you have won a copy of Wednesday Comics. And I'm freaking out. I'm like, you know, because I never won anything. I haven't won anything since a raffle at, like, Cub Scouts back when I was, like, 15 or something. You know, it doesn't really happen very often for me. So I'm thrilled. I'm running over there, like, right as the con ends. You know, they're kicking everybody out. But I go over to the DC booth, and there's, like, 15 other people with the same U1 code. Well, shit. Turns out that they wound up sending it to anybody who signed up for the mailing list and also signed up for the contest. So yeah, a little bit of a snafu there, but I still wound up getting a retail incentive copy of Blackest Night number 8 as a consolation prize, which was really nice of them. It was in a Doug Monkey cover with Hal Jordan reaching out to the other Lanterns, and really, really nice, and it goes for a pretty penny. In fact, I think it was selling for like 60 or 70 on the 4. So yeah, happy to have that. Whatever, I'll take it. Ran off, and that was the end of my day. Saturday, went to a couple of panels as well, and wound up going to the Neil Gaiman event at the end of the day, which was exceptional. It was the first CBLDF, is that Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, CBLDF, there we go, event that Neil's done in over 10 years, and he just was there reading his stuff to people and having a good time with it. So I was happy to be there and had a great time. And Sunday, more of the same. You know, just had a nice very, very cool time. I really didn't buy much at the con because, well, A, I'm unemployed, and B, I really didn't want to fill up my my luggage too much. I mean, I bought the biggest thing that I bought all weekend were the Blackest Night, Hal Jordan, and White Lantern Sinestro. Again, I'll talk about that more on 107. I don't want to get too into it here, but I also wound up getting for 50% off, I believe, the Daredevil Visionaries Volume 3, Frank Miller. Which, you know, nice deal on it. It might have been even more than 50%. It might have only been like $5. That's why I wound up getting it. But yeah, it was a good steal. And got a couple of other comics here and there. Got a Steve Bryant commission that was delivered to me. That was originally a Super Show one that I got at C2E2 instead of Jack Knight's Starman, which was heavenly. And Steve is on this episode, and I'll praise him more on that actual interview. And that's kind of all I can think of right now. Oh yeah, really, really good Mexican food. Well, okay, tacos and enchiladas and stuff like that at Flaco's Tacos at about 11 p.m. after the Neil Gaiman event ended. It's nice to find a place that's open until 2 a.m. around the corner from where I was staying. That was cool. And just overall, C2E2 was everything I wanted to be and more. Certainly going to try and go back next year. And if you want to have a good time at a con, it's a good place to have it. So I would highly recommend going if you didn't get a chance to go this time and you're in the area, or even if you're not, you know, it's cheap enough to go to Chicago. I'll call it there. We got our interviews from Mocha and C2E2 coming up here. Go ahead, listen to it, enjoy, and I'll be back to wrap this up afterwards.
What's this? I'm actually doing an interview at Mocha for once, as opposed to talking about it afterwards. That's an absolute shock. I got the guy behind Team Boat here with me, and his name is?
Hi, I'm Dave Roman.
Hi, Dave Roman, and how are you enjoying your time here at Mocha this weekend?
I am enjoying it quite a lot. It's one of my favorite conventions of the year, and it's a little bit earlier, so it's warmer and nicer, but not too warm.
Yes, I was gonna say, I think you'd rather be warm than hot, and last year was just boiling.
Yes, I still have welts from last year's...
Still have the rug burns,
yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about Team Boat.
Team Boat is the adventures of a boy who's actually named Team Boat.
Okay.
Because he has the birth powers to transform into a small yacht.
Okay.
Which, as you can imagine, makes him very a hot commodity at school. All the kids are always trying to take advantage of his boat powers.
So in other words, they enjoy riding the teen boat.
Yes, that's right. Lots of boat parties.
Lots of sexual innuendo, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Now, have you ever considered converting him to Judaism so he'd be teen boatstein?
He actually is half Jewish.
Oh, wow.
He did have his boat mitzvah.
Oh, boat mitzvah. Nice, yes. Nice. See, the puns just roll off the tongue with teen boat, don't
exactly.
They? So how many team boats have been done at this point?
We've done 8 issues. They're mini comics. So most of them are about 8 pages, but the last 2 issues have been 16 pages.
Okay.
So they're double sized.
Gotcha. And are there any collections?
We haven't done a collection yet. We'd like to at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, we're just having fun doing mini comics.
And meanwhile, you're one of the collaborators on Life Meter, correct?
Yes. I am one of 3 editors of Life Meter Comics, mm-hmm. which is a... anthology of video game inspired comics.
Awesome, yeah. And I mean, from the looks of it, I mean, the fact that I just bought it does sort of prove that it looks pretty awesome to me. But it's even though there's different artists and different creators on it, it all sort of has the same like general idea and flow to it.
Sort of. I mean, the idea of basically, if there is an idea behind it, is that it's like a day in the life of a video game character. It's
right.
Sort of like you've played the games, but what do they do when, you know, the camera's off.
Because we've all been wondering that all
yeah,
our lives. Yes.
Exactly. But the coolest part is just getting to work with lots of different artists with a very diverse range of styles,
mm-hmm.
from cartoony to realistic to serious to
right.
funny, and getting to see what their take on some of our favorite characters are.
Well, very cool, very cool. Now, where can people find more of your work online?
You can go to thecomicsbakery.com. That's probably the fastest way to find about all our different projects.
Very cool, very cool. All right, well, thanks for joining us here on Comic Timing, and enjoy the rest of your weekend here at Mocha.
Thanks a lot.
All right, and more from Mocha if I decide to turn this back on. All right, folks, we're back here at Mocha. Got at least one more interview in me before I pass out. And we got Witch Hunter versus the Woman in Black. And why don't we introduce the man behind that to everybody? Why don't we?
Thanks. I'm Vin Ferrante. I'm the creator and writer of Witch Hunter and from Monarch Comics.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about the book.
Witch Hunter is basically, he actually is a witch himself, so it's kind of like a play on words. He actually fights the powers that be that are in the shadows that are sort of pointing the fingers at everyone else while they steal all the magic for themselves, kind of like all the older races. And one of the reasons that people like Witch Hunter is that he's extremely irreverent, doesn't take himself too seriously. Mm-hmm. So people kind of like to identify with somebody who's able to sort of take things in stride and sort of like, you know, poke fun at the establishment and pull them down and try to like empower everybody else, because people sort of forget the powers that they have, and they're sort of putting their powers in, like, you know, colognes, other things like that.
Right.
And the Scarlet Shadow, which is the villains, actually draw people's power out through the things that they invest in.
Okay.
To kind of like turn the world into what they want. Witch Hunter is trying to sort of, by example, inspire them to say, you know, you're a lot more than that.
So we all, whether we like it or not, put power in things? Is that what this whole thing's about?
Basically.
Okay.
We're just empowering the wrong things.
I gotcha.
And they're just capitalizing on that because they're like, oh, so you people like this? Okay, fine. So we'll just suck you dry through that. Which is essentially what's happening anyway. So I kind of try and, you know, I want to make it fun. I want to make it a fun adventure story. I was inspired by Jack Kirby, Frank Bruner, you know, Walt Simonson. These are the people that I grew up reading. So I want to, Dark Shadows, Planet of the Apes, these are all the things that I just wanted to put into the book. And so if anybody gets any message out of it, then that's great. If it makes them feel better about themselves or inspires them to do something. But I wanted to basically just entertain people and, you know, hopefully just tell a good story.
That's all we can ask for, really, in life and in comics.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's all you can really go for. Now, this is issue 3 that I have in my hand over here.
Right.
But how long has the story existed? I know that you mentioned that it was in previous forms before this.
Yeah, well, actually, I created it in 76 when I was playing with Mego Dolls, and then I properly trademarked it in 93 with the you know, Division of Copyrights and Trademarks, and I did it as a strip in Comic Culture magazine for a little close to a year. And then in 2005, I actually incorporated as Monarch Comics, and now we're actually going to be moving from quarterly to bi-monthly, because I was actually able to expand the staff quite significantly recently.
Cool.
So once I get issue 4 published, I'm actually going to like approach Diamond again and see if they're interested in a trade with like a higher price point, because that's the whole thing, is they have that 2000 thing.
Right.
So right now it's available through the website. I sell directly to some retailers.
Uh-huh.
I was with Haven. So, but again, it's all about numbers. So once issue 4 is done, I'll be able to actually put together a trade or hopefully find another publisher that wants to publish it through them, which should be easier on me.
Yeah, Diamond's a difficult place to go through these days.
Right.
There's plenty of other places to get yourself out
there. Oh, yeah, there's tons of stuff. I mean, yeah. Barnes & Noble, if you go through, like, you know, one of the wholesalers, like Baker & Taylor, they're willing to look at it once I have the trade. So it's a matter of that there's no one right way to do it. As long as you're able to get stuff to the point of sale and put it in a form that people like, I mean, I think that there's a lot more options than people know.
Sure, and especially with the web the way it is these days, you can just do anything, really.
Right, exactly.
Now, where can people find out more about your stuff?
You can find it through the website is Monarch Comics Lair, so it's monarchcomicslair.com.
Mm-hmm.
We're also on Facebook, where I put up new pages from the comic every single week.
Mm-hmm.
There's previews of each issue that you can read through. We're also in a magazine called Strange Eons, which is a 10-page Witch Hunter adventure every other month.
Very cool.
It used to be called Planet Lovecraft Magazine, but now it's recently changed over to Strange Eons.
Uh-huh.
And we're also on MySpace. You can just look for Witch Hunter on MySpace, and you'll find a bunch of artwork on there.
MySpace? What is this MySpace you speak of?
It's a thing. It's not the place where they send you gifts that you don't want. It's the other place.
Yeah. Well, I assume eventually you'll be making the leap over to Facebook as well, because...
We're there.
Oh, you are? Okay,
yeah, no,
cool, cool, cool. All right.
Monarch Comics itself is on Facebook, plus there's a Witch Hunter fan.
Gotcha, okay.
But, you know, when people, like, send me an apple as a gift, or they want me to, like, play in the Mafia, I'm like,
please.
I barely have time to sleep.
I hear you.
It is a great place to put up pages, because I have about 27 different albums on there, so I have albums for just the pencils, the inks, the colors, and then actually previews of the book. So if people, I mean, even though I'm a writer, it's a visual medium. So I try to write extremely economically so that the pictures tell the story. And I think that's really important. You should be able to look at it.
Right.
and be able to tell the story from that. You know, so I don't like to overcrowd everything with too many words.
Sounds good to me, man. Yeah. Sounds good to me. Well, thanks a lot for joining us here on Comic Timing.
For talking
to me. Same here, and you'll be at New York Comic Con.
Yeah, Monarch Comics exhibits every year at booth 1817 from the New York Comic Con. Mm-hmm. They've been really nice to us. They do a lot to help promote us, mm-hmm. and we really just look forward to a long-standing association with them.
All right, well, I'll see you there, and enjoy the rest of your mocha.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for talking to me.
All right, same here, and more from Comic Timing, maybe.
Everything's fucking wonderful!
Fred Chow, I am accosting you at MoCA. Now I'm just scared. That's
That kind of turns me off.
He's gonna eat me. He's gonna eat me. Look out! Look out! One form or another.
No.
Now, I went the entire Super Show and wound up talking to you for like 5 minutes.
Yep.
So here we are.
I've been avoiding you all Super Show.
I figured as much. And yet I saw you out of the corner of my eye, and I'm like, Fred, now is the time.
And I looked over, and I was like, fuck, he saw me make eye contact. I gotta get the fuck out of here. Oh, too late.
So Super Show, you had a table. This time you're just wandering.
This time I'm just wandering. I'm just enjoying the show.
And are you enjoying it?
Here's the thing. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I used to love the show. I used to come here all the time, uh-huh. Before I had a book through at house.
Back in the Puck building and the first time
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And however many years that we did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just walked around and picked up stuff. And then, through with Johnny here, I'd been tabling with At House.
Right.
At House isn't going for a table this year, so I'm mm-hmm. walking around. And, like, I'm bumping into everybody, and I know a damn lot of people. And I'm like, holy crap. How did I know people? Like, I guess like comics is a small world because it's kind of cool, but it's really weird to be like, oh wait, I turn around and I'm like, I know you, I know you, I know you.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm in like a bunch of conversations and that's awesome, but it was really startling.
Well, for me, it's fun to be back on this coast because after being at Emerald City, where only like 3 people knew me, to being back on here where I'm literally running into people every like 5 seconds, it's like. Home again. Well, meanwhile, Chris is over there like, you've ruined my experience because every 5 minutes someone comes up to you and they're like, hey, what's up, man? You know me? I'm like Asgarda137 from the forums. You know me? I'm like, yeah, dude.
And for me, it's just a little startling because I wasn't expecting it. You know, I thought I was just going to walk around and lightly browse. And I'm like, hey, it's been so long. Hey, it's been so long.
Well, people know Johnny Hero.
I guess so, but I didn't think that was true.
You're an award-winning Johnny Hero.
No, I'm losing. I've lost 4.
Yeah, but isn't it just happy to be nominated?
It is, but mostly, actually, less happy to be nominated, more happy to take my mom as my date to the Eisners.
Nice.
That was, like, the best thing about the Eisners, was taking my mom as my date.
I wonder if Wachter is going to do that this year.
Did he get nominated?
He got nominated. Yeah, Dave Wachter got nominated for best web strip.
Holy fucking shitballs.
Yep, Guns of Shadow Valley. Yep.
I'm going to slap that guy's face with my big fucking cock. That's amazing. I love it.
I know. When I saw it, not only that.
Does he listen to Dave?
Dave.
Congratulations, Wachter.
He better listen because he was on the show. Yeah. So. I've interviewed him a couple times and he was on the Super Show episode. So
dude,
if he's not listening, he is now. Oh,
I really
man.
Didn't know. I guess I haven't been near an internet in a while.
Dear internet. The Eisner.
What is this online thing?
I don't
know. I can't get my phone to work.
Well, you're a self-professed curmudgeon these days.
I kind of am.
Are you jaded with the comic book industry?
I'm not jaded with the comic book industry. I'm jaded with myself in it.
Really?
Especially coming here.
Mm-hmm.
Holy crap, there's so much good talent.
Yeah.
And they're all so younger.
Right.
So they're all ambitious about it, and they have so much better stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how can I compete with these people? Like, I go home from work, and, you know, regular 9
right.
to 5.
Right.
I go home and I drink. Because, because right now, you know, I'm getting older taste and stuff. I'm collecting nice scotches and stuff.
That's,
and I'm like,
good.
You know, oh, okay,
good.
You know, like, I'd rather, like, end my day with a cigar and a nice scotch. And, well, not that I smoke cigars, but
I'm not
like, an occasional cigar, but
yeah.
not regularly.
I've never smoked anything in my life.
Really?
Holy crap. It shocks the hell out of me that I've gone this far.
I got some nice crack in my
dude.
Place.
No! Wait. Trust me, I live in Ditmas Park. If I want to get it, I can get it, all right?
Nice. Nice one. Oh, sorry, Ditmas Park.
It's sad but true. It's sad but true. It's been on the news. All right.
No, but everybody's, like, young and ambitious. And, like, I mean, I guess I just, lately, I feel like I haven't had the focus in the way that in the way that I feel like I should, but at the same time, I'm a little bit exhausted, especially when I come home from work. So it's like, okay, yeah. well, and I've started, the good thing is that I've gotten into other arts a little bit that aren't as, I feel like comics is a very disciplined art. And, they're, you know, it's very like, everything is a very deliberate decision in the way that people are moving and, like, you know, the way that people are moving from panel to panel and everything that people are saying.
Right.
And the thing is, like, I've also really liked painting over the years, so I've been painting a little bit more.
Cool.
And painting feels a little more free to me. I also love just going out into this world and sketching, so I've been doing that a little bit. And
plenty of happy trees and happy clouds and happy, nice big afros on top of your head.
Exactly. Yeah. I wish I were that guy. I wish I were Bob. But, yeah, I just don't feel... it takes a little less concentration, and it feels like just a little more kind of, I hate to sound like pretentious artsy, but like it feels a little more like it's moving through me, whereas comics feel more deliberate.
Well, I feel that way as well. Like going through here, and I see the people that are selling the $1 web comics or like the $1, you know, like ash cans and stuff like that. And then I see the guys that are trying to sell the $10 ash cans or the $40 25 pagers, and I'm like, okay, I understand that this takes a lot of effort. I understand that this takes a lot of concentration, but wouldn't it be better to sell 40 $10 comics than four $40 comics, you know, or something like that?
I think it just depends on what you can do to make money back.
Right.
You know, I mean...
Because that's what this show is for me. Like, I mean, it's great finding the smaller people, but there's a bunch of people that I simply cannot buy their work because it's just, it's out of my price range. And I'm freaking unemployed right now. All right? So, seeing the, and I'm not even saying this to, like, be like, wow, I'm unemployed, but... Even if I wasn't, I'm not going to buy a $40 book if there's a $10 book that's just as good sitting right next to
me. That's true. That's true.
And that's how I feel
about
a show.
But at the same time, there will be a budget. You know, hopefully there will be someone to buy a book. And there always is. You know, and there's always, like, I remember, like, a couple years ago before Johnny Hero and coming into Mocha Show, just, like, being like, oh, that's, you know, I saw this print, and it was, like, a $100 print or something. It was self-screened and all that, and it was beautiful. And I was like, I can't afford that. I'm sorry. But then, like, actually some other dude came by and bought the print. And I was like, oh, good for that dude, you know? Like, whatever you can...
And you
actually,
got a sale.
Actually, one of the things that I've really noticed with having my own comic that's interesting is the way I work. I'm like, oh, okay, I would love, you know, my individual Johnny Hero comics, when they were coming out, it was $3 an issue.
Right.
And there's five collected, so in the trade, it's $15. And so I always thought, okay, well, people will try out the $3 issue, and, you know, if they like it, then they might, you know, either buy more single issues or they'll buy the trade.
Like crack.
Yeah, and like crack. But it's not like crack. Like, people who've never heard of the comic will, like, flip through it and then decide to buy the trade rather than the $3 sampler.
Wow.
And I'll be like, oh, well, that's a really nice thing to know, but that's not the way that I work. And now looking at you, it's not the way you work.
It's not the way I work
either.
We're
just cheapskates. But I don't think that's true about myself. I just like to save my money for nice scotch.
But a nice single malt, man, you can't beat that.
Oh, man, yeah. Ooh. The Kalila, nice and smoky.
Oh, God damn it. Now I'm getting thirsty. Now, watch out, man.
Yeah. No, but... but, yeah, so it's like there will always be that audience for those more expensive things out there.
Sure.
But to be quite honest, like... I'm really curious to hear how the show is afterwards from people who are tabling, because I do know that tables were a little more expensive this year.
Yes. There were some people that still aren't happy about the move from the Buck Building to here and that sort of stuff.
And to me, the show, like, as much as I love, you know, like, I love the guys at First Second, I love, you know, but, like, this show, for me, especially when I was first coming here, when I was, you know, like, in college or whatever, I was like, oh my God, there's all these, like, zinesters making comics, you know? This is an awesome place for that. And I do wonder a little bit, with the prices being a little more expensive, how people are going to feel about their experience, especially the people who are just putting stapled zines together and selling them at $5 a pop.
Right. Well, you know? It's going to go one of two directions. Either it's going to continue to become more upscale, or they're going to hit a ceiling and they're going to realize we've got to change things. We got to roll back down.
Or the other thing is, you know, it just could... be like, oh, well, maybe someone decides to get a table this year, but not next year. But then somebody else decides.
And then somebody else.
There's always rotating. Well, the good thing is there's always more people making comics who want to get that kind of exposure.
No question. Yeah, I mean, you could tell by, I mean, everything's sold out here. It's not like people aren't still here.
Yeah.
So I know the last year.
Exactly.
At the end of the last year, I remember Evan Dorkin wrote this, you know, almost this, like, scathing post about how he felt like Mocha was not what it used to be, how it wasn't for him anymore. I'm not even sure if he's here. I don't think he is.
Yeah.
But before this, you know, he had pre-reg for a Mocha table every single year.
Yeah.
And this is the first time he didn't. But guess what? His table is probably taken by somebody else right now.
Evan Dorkin got mad at me.
Oh, really?
This was way before making comics or anything. I mean, I love the guy. But, you know, like, I'm from California.
Yeah.
I'm kind of, like, especially when I was growing up, I was a little bit of a surfer dude, you know, and...
Could never tell by your voice, really.
you don't even know, like, when I... when I get serious, yeah. I start talking in a California accent.
Dude!
Yeah, and that's when you know... And the funny thing is, that's when you know I'm serious. So if I'm really... If I'm really into something, I'm like, dude, that's awesome, dog. And you're like, wow, that he really likes it.
Once you start sounding like Randy Jackson, yeah. then we know things have gone too far.
But I also have a weird accent. Like, instead of saying hand, if I start saying hand.
Hand.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's a hand band, man. Like, that's when you know that I'm serious.
You become Australian?
Something like that. It's this weird mix of, like, California and something else, and I don't know what it is.
That's so weird. Maybe,
anyway.
Maybe it's your Asian heritage. Perhaps.
Yes, because that's exactly how we sound.
Yes, as you were saying.
You know, as much as I love Milk and Cheese or whatever,
yeah.
I have a very, very fond place in my heart for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the comic book. So, I remember, like... having him sign one, and he was just like, I can't believe you like this. And I was like, oh, that broke my heart because I liked it so much.
Yeah. Well, Evan Dorkin, I've told
him. I mean, I do love his Milk and Cheese stuff, but, you know.
I've told this.
A special place in my heart.
Yes. Well, same here. And I mean, just like, you know, Ren and Stimpy and stuff like that are all in there. I mean, that's where Dan Slott started, was Ren and Stimpy. And I'm sure if someone came up and talked to Ren and Stimpy with him now, he'd be like, but I'm doing the Avengers, dude, you know? But like, Evan Dorkin, I've told this story before on the show. He was my first interview on Comic Timing. And it didn't exactly go so well because I was young and didn't know everything that he had done.
I think I've heard this story before.
Yeah, but it's just that, you know, he schooled me, basically. He threw me under the bus a little bit, but it was fun, and some people still to this day say that was one of their favorite episodes. I'm like, that's great. It scared the shit out of me.
Oh.
But he's a great guy, and he writes great books, and that's all you can really, you know, ask for.
Draws
great, all hilarious as all fuck, but he's been in the business long enough to actually be able to say...
Yeah.
You like that? You know?
That's true, yeah. I guess I don't have enough under my belt yet.
Oh, there. But you'll get there, trooper.
Yeah. thanks for the pat on the back.
Thank you!
So what's up with Johnny Hero these days?
Johnny Hero is just kind of... Were we recording when I was talking about this? Just taking time out of painting? Or was
That was then.
Or that was then?
That was then. That was then. This is now. Yeah.
Oh, if I could fly.
You did mention that you're painting more and stuff like that on air, so
So I'm just taking a nice break. And I would love to do another... basically what happened was, after Johnny Hero, I worked on a children's book project, and I've mainly finished it, except it's completely black and white because I take so long to do colors. I would love to hire out a colorist, but I can't do that without cash.
Right.
And because I blow all my cash on alcohol and drugs, I would need some kind of...
I'm learning so much about you, man.
I need some...
Not all of it's good.
Well, there are certain things. It's like my work cash, like my 9-to-5, I use that cash on, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So... So I'm like, okay, well, I need, like, some kind of advance to get my book colored so I can hire out a colorist or something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in a pitch process for the children's book.
Okay.
And after doing the children's book, I would love to do another Johnny Hero. Like, absolutely love to. I've got other stories in mind.
Right.
And to be quite honest, like, I just found out that this morning my dad's going in for heart surgery.
Oh.
So, wee! And it was one of those things that really kicked my butt a little and said, like, I need to make this second story happen. Because the second story I've had in my head for a long time now. And it focuses mostly on Johnny's parents.
Okay.
So I'm like, seeing my parents go through what they're going through, I feel like I kind of need to get this out. So I'll kind of work on pages of those from time to time. But in the meantime, like, I really do need to take a break because, as I was saying, comics feel so deliberate.
Sure.
I just need to do something that, you know, is...
Yeah, you don't want to put half-ass in there. You got to be 100% or else there's nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
And I would love to see if, you know, I could get some kind of advance or something like that to attack another Johnny Hero book. Or, you know, slowly do it. But Either way, I don't know. Who knows? It's so... Life is hard.
Yes.
with a day job.
Oh, I agree.
Well, the thing that's amazing, and like one of the things that's amazing with all these this independent comics festival and seeing so many young kids is that so many of these young kids are like going to SCAD or SVA or whatever, and it's like it allows them time to work on comics and have projects. So when they get out to the world, you know, it's like, oh, I already have something.
Yeah.
That, you know, instead of me who's, you know, oh, I'm working. And in my off-work time, I have to do all this stuff. But then I'm like, would I rather do that or drink and hit on girls?
Well, okay. My only problem with SCAD and SVA, they need better acronyms. They really do. Because when I hear SCAD, it sounds like it's a disease.
CCS.
Right. Or CCS, that could work.
That's a good acronym.
Yeah. SVA, you know, I mean, seriously, SVA, SVA.
No, SVA is a good acronym.
Would you like to go to the SVA?
I think SVA is a fine enough acronym.
SVA, all right.
SCAD does sound a little too much like SCAD.
I'm sorry, you are suffering from the SCAD.
But it's amazing that these, you know, schools do have this. I never had that when I, you know, I didn't know what I was doing in college at all. And now I just have a bunch of debt.
Nobody does.
Yeah.
Nobody does. Shit, man. People go to college, they get their majors, and they wind up doing something entirely different half the time.
Pretty much, yes.
It's like, yeah, I'm TV radio. I'm doing a great job with that with my... What am I doing?
You're doing a podcast.
Oh.
You're doing something.
But I'm not getting paid for it.
Dude, who gets paid for it? I'm not getting paid for what I do.
That's true. But at least you got a day job.
That's true.
I wrote a book.
And actually, my day job does kind of have to do a little bit with... I switched around majors a lot in college, and I started out as theater arts, doing writing and directing, and then moved on to writing, literature, and publishing, and then moved on to film. Mm-hmm. And I got out of film just as film was turning digital, so all of a sudden I was like, hey, I know how to edit on a Steam Deck, and they're like, we need digital people now. So
I went to Edward R. Murrow High School, and they have hand-me-downs, or at least they did when I was there, from the ABC local affiliate, WABC.
Holy crap, that's awesome.
Yeah, so they have a bunch of these old tape machines and stuff like that that we were using to edit our public access show that would air like once or twice a month or something like that. And we'd be using all these old machines because they'd all moved on to digital at this point.
Okay.
And it doesn't help at all. it's great that I know how to use these reel to reels and these three and a quarter inch tapes and all that, but then you need to learn again to do digital because it's all non-linear now.
Exactly.
I mean, it's great, but
it's amazing.
You got to relearn your.
But it's
your
a lot of money to relearn.
Right. Exactly.
And I don't have that money right now.
I would agree. Yeah. Neither do I.
So in that way, like, I mean. And I've always drawn over the years. Mm-hmm. So I guess, like, through that I found, like, oh, well, you know, these stories that I have in my head instead of, like, you know, trying to write scripts or, like more traditional movie scripts or write short stories or, you know, or something for theater. I was just like, oh, well, I know how to draw, I guess.
Right.
Let me try and do comics. And that seems to, of all those, have worked out the most. But also my day job is in publishing. So I design books. And I'm like,
cool.
Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'm kind of
you're almost
in the
there.
Field, you know?
Yeah,
I'm,
it works.
It's slow. It's a slow process. I'm like 32 now, so I just turned 32. So
it's not too bad.
It's kind of weird to feel like, wow, I'm solidly in my 30s now, and I still have no idea what I'm doing.
Well, on the bright side, though, you don't have to worry about a birthday mattering until you're 35, because once you hit the milestone marks, then no birthdays matter until you hit the 5 or the 0, the 5 or the 0, the 5 or the 0.
You see, well, I think this birthday mattered a lot.
Yeah, really?
Because here's the thing. Ever since 22, even a little bit before 22, but 22 was, like, the roughest year because I was living in London at the time. I'd gotten a... and I was working at an under-the-table job in London and barely making any money, like, fucking, like, eating, like, pretty much off the street.
Jeez.
Like, it was brutal. And I had too much pride at that time to, like, go to my folks or whatever. But it was, like, waiting for shops to throw out their food at the end of the day so I could raid the garbage bags.
Oh,
like,
my God.
It was rough. And I mean, I had a house. I lived in an apartment with a bunch of people. And I was able, through my job, to work enough to make rent but not really to afford food, so that's kind of what happened.
Right.
So ever since then, that's pretty rough, dog, you know? So it's like I've been slowly working my way up since then. So every year since I've been like
you know, in my early 20s, has been better.
Okay.
This was the first year that...
It was like roadblock?
I felt like was a little rougher than the year before.
Okay.
And so in that way, it felt like a milestone year because it wasn't like, oh, it's another birthday. I'm getting older and older is better all the time. And I'm just like, ooh, this was the first year that like wasn't quite as nice.
Hey, but you know, everybody has those ups and downs.
Yeah.
You know, you got to roll
but
with
the
punches.
But not me. I only had ups.
Well... It's about damn time you got your down, man, so you can get back up, all right?
I guess so.
And now I know where the phrase Fred Chow's gonna eat you comes from.
Dude,
because when you were on the streets of London, you would have eaten anybody.
Well, the funny thing is, like, that's people come up to me and they're like, you know, because of Geek Speak, they're like, Fred Chow's gonna eat you. Nope. There's more to it than it's like, all right.
Yeah.
Like, I don't make shit up when, like, All right, you ready for this?
I'm ready. Hit me. All right,
so Fred Chow's Gonna Eat You is my intro.
Okay.
And, you know, I used to be part of this project called Roy G. Biv.
Uh-huh.
And we were working on our first album, Acronymous.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of acronyms.
Okay.
And it was a hip-hop project, and, like, Fred Chow's Gonna Eat You was supposed to be my intro, so it was just like somebody else would sit there and say, Fred Chow's Gonna Eat Ya, ha, 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 ha. And then I would come in and say, hey, you sexy chick, come and sit on my lap. I know the way you tick, let me slap that ass, and then we'll smoke some hash or maybe tope some grass. You want another hit? Nah, baby, I pass. Let's do it right now. Let's do it right, Fred Chow. You know we get so crazy. If I could be your lady. Oh, well, I thought you were rubbing up on me just like Roosevelt felt that economy. You say you want to get raw with me, then don't go chasing waterfalls on me. Don't go chasing waterfalls. You know, like, I don't make shit up, man.
Dude.
Like,
wow.
It goes beyond that.
You've officially made my day. That's it. That's it. Nothing will top this.
Yep.
No matter what I eat for dinner tonight, this is filling up my belly more than anything, man.
Awesome.
All right. Give everybody your website out there.
I update my robot chow, and that's chao.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
And my fredchow.com has been down for, it exists, but it hasn't been updated for a long time. But robotchow.wordpress.com is a, you know, if
awesome.
You want to check out my stuff. And
you have a Twitters?
I don't have a Twitters. I also sell prints and stuff through charmingwell.com, so
awesome.
It might be interesting to see my other art that I do.
Very cool.
What was that?
Very cool, very cool.
Very cool, very cool.
Yes.
And and I think that's it for now. Hopefully, if everything goes well, at the beginning of May, I might do an exhibit of my paintings over at Bergen Street Comics. So that's a
very nice.
Yeah, so that's a whole different like kind of side of the art that I do.
Well, if that happens, I will try my ass to be there.
Dimmis Park isn't that far away.
Yeah.
Just gotta get off the crack a little and then you'll be able to make it.
All right. Look. Just because they sell... all right, bye. Dude, Fred, always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, absolutely,
thank you for finally
dude.
Putting your voice on Comic Timing. Okay.
Thanks for finally getting... instead of ignoring me at Super Show.
I thought it was the other way around.
It was, but all now right. I'm adding spin. This is spin.
Nice,
remember, I also know how to work spin. You're not the only one who went to broadcast journalism school, dog.
Oh, word. And
please. Up the lyrical gangster.
I was cracking up Harold Jennett all weekend at Super Show, going up to him and just randomly going, wicka, wicka, what? Wicka, wicka, what? Wicka, wicka, who? Wicka, wicka, what? And on a serious note, hope your father's all right and everything works out okay, man.
All right. Thanks so much.
No problem. And that's it from Mocha, because that was 23 minutes.
Damn.
All right, so let's get this going here. Comic Timing, first interview of C2E2. First time I've bothered to turn on the recorder, because I got myself a colorist in the room. Mr. Paul Mounts. How you doing, Paul?
Okay.
How you enjoying your weekend here at C2E2?
It's a good show. It's a really good show. I'm glad these guys are setting up in Chicago. I think it's going to be a long haul for them here.
Nice wide open aisles.
Yeah.
Plenty of room to walk around.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, Marvel and DC have nice big booths. Everybody sent their big guns out, and the guys that run the show treat everyone real well. So
awesome, excellent. Now, how many years now have you been doing the whole coloring thing? I'm not trying to out you how old you are, sir. I'm just looking for experience.
Oh gosh, about 20 years now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And how has the process changed?
Well, when I started, it was all hand painted. Actually, when I first started, they hadn't even been doing blue line hand painted coloring too much. It was all still the old old color coding process where you'd actually fill in codes on like Xeroxes, and then somebody in a print shop somewhere would actually cut Ruby Lith by hand to make the separations. By the time I started, we were moving over to blue line coloring, where you do hand-painted color on a watercolor board. Mm-hmm. The line art would be on an acetate overlay that would be laid over that, and then it would be scanned together, so it was almost like hand-painted artwork.
Okay.
Then around 1994, everything started going digital, and it's been digital ever since.
That's basically how it goes now, all computers all the time.
All Photoshop,
Is there anybody who still sticks by their laurels and tries to do it the old-fashioned way, or?
No, there's, you know, unless it's like a hand-painted comic, like an actual hand-painted comic, no, it's all digital now.
Cool. And how do you try to change up your style depending on which artist you're basically coloring over?
Yeah, every artist has his or her own requirements. You know, Brian Hitch, it's all about the color choices. You know, he likes a lot of monochromatic scenes, the dramatic lighting, the two-tone lighting.
Right.
Doesn't care so much about, you know, everything being super rendered as long as the color choices are right. There's other colors like Amanda Connor. She really likes when I do some of the rendering and stuff on her. Makes it. Actually, Jimmy likes the rendering more. Amanda wishes I colored it more like animation cells, but that's an ongoing battle between the two of them.
Right. So. Which I'm sure has led to some interesting dinner conversations.
Right. You know, John Romita Jr., everything's... I'm actually pointing at artwork. You guys can't see this, but I'm pointing at artwork on my table as we talk about this. So
It's fine. As long as you describe it to people on an audio podcast, they know what you're doing.
I'm pointing at a John Romita piece of artwork and saying, John Romita Jr., his artwork's a lot more graphic, more shape-oriented. So the colors and everything need to be more geometric, more shape-oriented. So, yeah, it just depends on the artist.
Cool. And it's
all about the storytelling. You know, you need the color to tell the story. So the color should lead your eye to where it needs to go on the page and within the panel and things like that.
Right. And I'm sure depending on the artist, depends on how much instruction you get and how loose an idea that you get to do your own stuff versus what they want to do.
Right. I mean, I was talking to Jackson Geis about that yesterday because, you know, he understands comic art well. When you look at his panels, you know exactly where your eye's supposed to go. So I don't have to do as much work on my end from the storytelling. I can concentrate more on mood, on, you know, color choices, things like that, whereas an artist who needs more help telling the story, sometimes it's easier to keep the mood lighting down and just tell the story so your eye goes where it's supposed to go.
Cool. Now, are you one of those guys who's his own worst critic, or are you usually satisfied with what you
have? Yeah, my editor, as a matter of fact, my editor on Fantastic Four, Lauren Sankovich, is always yelling at me. It's like, let go of the page. It's fine. It's like, no, give me another 20 minutes on it. It's like, no, you have to let go of the page now. So, yeah, you know.
All right. Now, you're still on Fantastic Four, correct?
I am, yes. Finishing up issue 579 right now, which is filling issue drawn by Neil Edwards. He's kind of the secondary artist because Dale Eaglesham's really, he's so good he can't necessarily do monthly all the time.
Right.
It's worth the wait because the Eaglesham issues have been so beautiful. So.
Oh, no, everything's been fantastic so far. I've been really satisfied with it myself.
I know Jonathan Hickman has this book plotted out for the next 5 years, I think, and it's this overarching story that is just going to blow people away once it all comes out.
To be completely honest, it's about damn time. I've been waiting for a nice long run on a book like Fantastic Four for a while, so hopefully that'll indeed be the case.
Yeah, he's in for the long haul. And it was great because I don't even think, if you talk to him, he's actually down at the end of the row here.
Oh,
I'm pointing at Jonathan Hickman. You know, he wasn't a huge Fantastic Four fan before he got the book. And I think that's why he's going to be such a good writer on it, because, you know, he knows and cares about the characters, but he doesn't have this, like, huge fanboy baggage.
Right.
And it allows him to take them in places that are respectful, but takes them to new places. So it's good.
And, I mean, you've been on Fantastic Four for what seems like forever at this point.
I think, and I'll have to do the count, but I think if I do another 17 or 18 issues, I'll have done more than Stan and Jack did.
Oh, my God. So, wow. That's an achievement right there.
So we'll see if they keep me on the book that long.
I certainly hope so, because, I mean, so far, so good. I mean, I've been reading FF for years now, and I've seen your name over and over and over and over again. Yeah. So I guess so far, so good, right?
Right, yeah.
You've seen a bunch of different art teams. You've seen a bunch of different writing teams and all that. I mean, I know you can't exactly have a favorite, but what were some of your favorite issues to color during your run so far?
Just on
Fantastic Four.
Well, the Mike Waringo stuff. I mean, Mike and I were good friends. We worked together on so many different things, like Telos and Spider-Man. And,
right.
You know, his Fantastic Four, especially he and Mark Waid, when they took it over, they did that 10-cent issue and kind of really revitalized the title after he had been moribund for a while.
Right.
Was a great thing. I really thought the Mark Miller-Brian Hitch run started out really well. I thought, you know, there was a lot of problems that happened during the run that didn't probably make it as great as it could have been throughout the entire run.
Right.
But you know, that those first few issues I thought were really great, especially that first one stands out in my mind.
Yeah. It does read really well as a collected edition, though.
Right, yeah. It definitely does read better collected than it did as monthly. And, right. And of course, you know, the Hickman and Eaglesham stuff now is just, it's just a phenomenal work on this stuff.
Well, so. I would certainly agree with that. Now, where online can people find your stuff?
Bongotone.com. It's Bongotone. That's the name of my company. Not a whole lot there right now, but there is a giant portfolio of stuff I've worked on and convention pictures, things like that. Other than that, there's not a whole lot there. Disney called me to do a job one day, and they said, "Do you have an online portfolio?" It's like, "Yeah, I'll have one up in an hour." So the whole site was put together pretty quickly, but I'm working on adding more to it. There should actually be some more art and a blog and everything up probably in the next month or two. So
very cool. Art, blogs, and pictures of Adam West Batman.
There you go. Yes.
That's all we need. Well, thanks for joining us here, Paul, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
All right. Thank you. Take care, man. Thanks.
Okay, great. And more from C2E2 whenever I turn this thing on. Okay, more from C2E2 here. Raina Telgemeier is here. I got the last name right.
Yes,
booyah!
You did.
That's because I asked first. Woo-hoo. Like a nice human being. And she's got herself what looks to be a New York Times best-selling author book. Ooh. Ooh la la. Smile. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about it?
Smile is about being in middle school, having braces, and feeling really awkward about yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's also based on my own life as a middle schooler who happened to knock out her two front teeth.
Ooh.
At age 11.
Oh, wow.
And then had to get about 5 years of dental reconstruction done.
Oh, God.
Yeah, everybody's been to the dentist. A lot of people have had braces, but few cases are extreme as mine was. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a book about it.
See, I had a retainer in third grade, and then I had an impacted eye tooth, which then led to having braces for like 3 years for one frickin' tooth.
Yeah.
So I could relate a little bit on the dental side of things a little bit. Now, I know it might be a little bit of a spoiler, but how'd you knock out the two teeth?
Actually, it's only in the first 8 pages of the book,
okay,
so
cool.
Most people, it won't be too much of a spoiler.
All right.
I was running across a street with some friends. They were dropping me off at my house, and my friends said, "Hey, let's race." And one thing led to another. A friend of mine got slightly ahead of me, and I sort of reached out to grab the back of her jacket so as not to let her get ahead of me. And for whatever reason, that made me pitch forward.
Gross.
And just... you know, I thought I might have broken a leg or an arm or something, and the first thing I did was check to make sure my hands were okay, and
right.
I guess that's like an artist instinct. It's like, oh my gosh, are my drawing hands
right.
All right? And I was like, oh, I'm fine. And then I realized something was missing from the front of my mouth. It was my two front teeth.
All you want for Christmas is your
yeah,
two
yeah.
front
oh,
teeth.
I make the joke in the book. Don't worry. It's inevitable.
All right, good. Just checking. Just
yeah.
making sure there. Now, was this a story that was brewing for a while? Like, was this something that you actually wanted to tell, or did you just decide one day, hey, let's get that out there?
It was a story I had been telling people since it happened,
mm-hmm.
because every time you go to the dentist, mm-hmm. you have to explain your story.
Right.
Every time you move somewhere different and you meet people and they say, oh, what's different about your teeth? I can tell something's not quite normal about them.
Right.
I was just telling the story again and again,
uh-huh.
to the point where I was like, okay, the story's really long. It's very complicated.
Write
I think
it down,
I just need to get it
get
all
it
on paper
words.
So
right.
that... so that I can just say, here, just read it.
So now you don't have to tell it in person anymore.
You know.
Except to interviewers like me.
Well, it's good for selling books, because they're like, ooh, what happened? And I'm like, read the book. That'll tell you what happened.
And not only do you smile, but you also babysit, apparently.
I used to.
Once upon a time.
Yeah.
So the Babysitter's Club, of course, based on the original books.
Yep.
But how much liberty do you have with the Babysitter's Club? I mean, are you forced to retell, like, exactly, or are these new stories, or what exactly is going on with
these? These are adaptations of the original stories,
okay.
And the editors were really flexible with me. They
cool.
sort of said, you can do basically whatever you want with it, but they also knew that I was a purist, and I
right.
was a big fan when I was a kid, so I was not interested in making a lot of changes.
Okay.
Other than just kind of updating things to feel a little bit more modern.
Sure. Cell phones exist now, surprisingly.
Yeah, and they didn't have the cell phones when they formed the Babysitter's Club in 1986.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of the changes I made were cosmetic, and at a certain point I started changing certain chapter orders and you know, taking scenes and moving them to different places just because sometimes things play out a little differently when you're looking at them
right.
instead of when you're just reading about them. So
okay.
a few minor things were shifted, but...
just all for story purpose.
Yeah, always for story purpose. Always for the point that adapting something into comics is going to make things a slightly different reading experience.
Sure. Yeah, because, I mean, that happens all the time with graphic novels.
Yeah.
I mean, just because one thing happened one specific way in the original book doesn't mean it's going to happen exactly like that, but it's hopefully still going to be entertaining.
Yeah, and I tried to keep things as faithful as possible. The fans of the original series mostly noticed the cosmetic changes. They noticed, well, it's not the Babysitter's Club if they're not watching VHS tapes instead
I wonder.
And you know, but they didn't seem to notice, like, the chapter rearrangements and stuff like that.
All right.
Which means I did my job.
She's supposed to have a bouffant, and there is no bouffant.
I had a couple of those, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. I'm versed with the whole forum thing, so...
Yeah.
Ooh, it can get ugly sometimes.
LiveJournal is not always the friendliest place. Yeah, it's okay. It was really well-received.
It might be called LiveJournal, but it's not LiveJournal. Yeah. And mostly, of course, you're going for the teenage crowd a little bit, but is it all ages? I mean, can 40-year-olds enjoy it as much as teenagers, or is it just more of a teenage thing?
I think so. Okay. I think there's plenty of women my age and slightly older and slightly younger who liked the same kinds of things that I liked when I was young. Mm-hmm. So it's more nostalgic for people that age to read something like this. But, you know, there's a lot of mothers now who are like, I can give this to my daughter and we can share this together. And so, you know, I think it there's something for everybody.
Yeah, and it's a generational thing. You're keeping the Babysitter's Club alive for a new generation to see it, basically. Moving on.
Yeah.
All right, and what's your website?
It's goraina.com, goraina.com. Yeah.
And they can find everything there, Babysitter's Club, Smile, the works?
Everything.
Fantastic. All right, well, Raina, thanks for joining us here on Comic Timing. Enjoy the rest of your weekend here in lovely Chicago, and hope to see you again sometime soon.
Thank you.
All right, and hi, David.
Hi again.
We're done.
Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here at C2E2 as Saturday winds down with Lee Cozy, artist of Star Wars and quite possibly other things. Hi. That's the best way to describe it right now, because there's nothing certain. You don't know how the rest of the world's going to go. How you doing today, Lee?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How's your weekend been so far?
Really busy.
Good.
It's been a really good show.
Glad to hear it. Now you've been doing Star Wars covers mainly, correct? And T-shirts and all that jazz?
Not covers yet.
You're getting there.
Yeah, I've been doing Star Wars art for sketch cards, for various properties, licenses, whatnot. And I'm also doing T-shirts.
Cool. Very cool. Now, how difficult is it to capture the likeness of a character that, you know, everybody knows in the known universe, at least?
With a lot of practice, not very hard.
Yeah.
I think the biggest problem is just getting to know the nuances of the character. You know, best example is Harrison Ford. His face is crooked to the left. Like, his nose is way off, you know, the scars, things like that. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's probably the best example because he was the biggest pain in the ass to learn how to draw.
Gotcha, yeah. And unlike other Star Wars actors, for some reason he doesn't age.
Yeah, pretty much. He pretty much looks almost the same. Just slap a little gray on him.
Basically, yeah. Like, I mean, I sadly saw the last Indiana Jones movie, and I'm like, wait a minute, okay, he's still built like he's like 50. What the hell, man?
And he still did most of his own stunts.
I know. He's got to be crazy. He's got to be crazy, and yet we love him for it.
At least 30% insanity.
30% insane, or your pizza's free.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Now, you also do Kindergoth over there. Why don't you tell people about that?
Kindergoth is a comic book I created. It's published by Bloodfire Studios, and it's bloodfire.com. The sneaky little thing about Bloodfire Studios is it's an independent comic book publisher, but it's entirely run by comic book and film and TV professionals.
Nice.
So, for example, our senior creative executive is Len Wein. Who, of course, was the creator of Wolverine, Swamp Thing, Colossus, Nightcrawler.
I think, pretty much
the current X-Men.
You've got a good step one there.
Yeah. Myself, obviously, I work for Lucasfilm. I've worked on a lot of film and television projects. I've worked for IDW. We've also got Jeremy Cox, who is kind of like the Susan Lucci of the Eisner Awards. The man gets nominated left and right for coloring and never wins, but he's actually currently a colorist for Marvel on Spider-Man, Avengers. I think he just picked up two more books, he said.
I don't know
off the top of my head, but he's also doing DMZ for DC.
Oh, wow.
He was the colorist on Promethea. He was the colorist on Leave It to Chance.
And is there anything he doesn't do?
No. pretty much every major title you will find his stuff in.
Great.
Joel Adams, is my inker on Kindergoth. Mm-hmm. He's also the son of comic legend Neil Adams.
I've heard the name, yes.
He is, he does some stuff with Batman. But he's that Batman guy. That Neil Batman guy. He's obscure.
Yeah, just a little bit.
But Joel was actually one of the character designers on the animated version of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. He also was a character designer for King of the Hill.
Oh, cool.
He was a character designer for most of the Marvel animated stuff, and he's also the character designer, he's the lead animator, or one of the lead animators for most of the Marvel animated comics.
Wow.
We also have Brandon Hay writes Intergalactic for us. Brandon Hay was the writer for The Daily Show. He's also a writer for The Simpsons. He was lead writer on Frank TV, and he actually just got picked up at Lucasfilm to write his head writer on the new live-action Star Wars show.
That's great.
So that's pretty much like, and there's others of us. I can go on for hours.
Yeah,
but
you want to just throw in Stan Lee and the ghost of Jack Kirby while you're at it, just to keep going?
We haven't hired them yet.
Okay.
But pretty much that's the dirty little secret, is where he's self-distributing, we're self-publishing, but it's all comic book professionals in the industry who work for Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, doing our own thing, our own way. So it's kind of like it's our own sandbox.
Right. Basically, guys that have all made it in one way or another, just doing what they love to do.
Right. And that's kind of, and Kindergoth is kind of, it's our best-selling title right now. It's we're working right now to try and get it monthly. Hopefully by the end of the year, we'll be able to do that.
Very cool.
So keeping our fingers crossed. We also have Kindergoth.com, which is it's going to be relaunched here shortly as a webcomic as well, so that I can play around there. And then Len is actually writing some stuff for the Kindergoth regular series. And so basically I'm plotting it, Len writes it,
cool.
And then we'll have other artists like Joel and David Wong, and they'll probably be drawing it. I'll probably be drawing it occasionally. We know we got Josh Adams wanted to do an issue, so hopefully he'll come on board.
I think you say yes to Josh.
Yeah, Josh is cool. I like working with Josh.
Yes, or Neil will beat you up.
Well, actually, there's a funny project we're trying to do. I'm not sure if I should actually talk about it.
But you could just put blanks in where you don't really want to reveal it.
There you go.
Yeah.
But we want to do a joke issue, drawn by Josh Adams, inked by Joel Adams, and lettered by Neil Adams.
Nice.
And we're actually supposed to be working with Neil shortly to actually make a Neil Adams font.
Oh, cool.
So that he can letter the books quickly. But it was just really funny that we were going to have Neil Adams as the letter, and we wanted to run like a big ad in previews.
Like Neil Adams.
We were going to distribute that book and actually put lettered by Neil Adams. Like, we actually announced that he's doing the lettering, just to make people go, man.
That would sell, I guarantee you, because they'd be like, what the hell?
What is he? Lettering? Neil Adams' new project.
Hey, all right.
He's lettering a book about tattooed body pierced kindergartners. What the hell?
Okay.
And basically, it's a comedy book. So it's tattooed body pierced kindergartners saving the world from an alien invasion.
Very cool.
We also have them saving the world saving the school from Roseanne Barr in a mud pack on a Twinkie binge. We've got another book that we just did. We did for the Comic Con last year.
Uh-huh.
It was because we're busy doing movie development stuff, so we kind of stopped publishing regularly.
Right.
But we did release a comic book for Kindergoth last year. That is, there's two stories in it. The Really, Really Evil Machine.
Okay.
About a really, really evil kid who does really, really evil things with his really, really evil machine.
Really, really, really.
Really, really. In the really, really world. And also the primary story in it is actually Jesus Goes to School, which is the story of the 31st coming of Christ. And the joke is basically that Jesus keeps coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes back and says, I'm Jesus. And they go, blasphemer, kill him. No, but look, a miracle. Water, wine, witch, burn him at the stake. And so this time Jesus comes back and they send him to public school.
Mm-hmm.
A slow torture in and of itself.
Oh.
And of course he meets the kids who don't believe he's Jesus, so they proceed to, you know.
You're mispronouncing Jesus, man.
Actually, there's a joke in there about that.
Nice.
So
nice.
I'm not going to crack that because I don't want to ruin it for anybody who actually buys it.
All right.
And you can get that from bloodfire.com.
Very cool. Very cool. And is the webcomic basically going to be what's eventually collected in the singles, or is that
Even
different?
Or not, it runs, it runs, I don't want to say parallel to the continuity, but eventually the goal is to basically take the webcomic stuff and collect it into a trade. But the monthly comic book will be its own story arc.
Nice.
So it's actually, they sometimes relate to each other.
Okay, cool.
So, because periodically there's stuff that we want to put in the books that we don't really feel we can.
Sure.
I mean, there were a couple of jokes that, we wrote the book for PG-13, and at one point there was actually jokes about adult toys.
Okay.
We'll call them. And we're kind of looking at this going, we could put this in there. We warned everybody that it's PG-13. And then a six-year-old brought me her book to sign. And I'm kind of like, take that joke out now.
Damn it. So, it's called Kindergarten. There might be younger people reading.
Yeah, well, the joke was basically, you know, little kids. But come on, I mean, you know, my seven-year-old watches. He loved Robot Chicken. So he's like, Daddy, why are the claymation dolls' heads exploding? Well, they have too much gas.
Yeah, they're very, very excited.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and that's pretty much it. We've then, of course, Bloodfire also does a lot of our film development stuff, which is pretty much my day job is Bloodfire and Lucasfilm related stuff. So, and doing sketch cards for Topps and Rittenhouse and Marvel.
Cool. And hopefully some more Star Wars stuff to come.
A lot more Star Wars stuff. I actually just got invited to Celebration 5, so I'll be a guest there. So.
Very cool. And by the same peeps that run this show.
Yeah, actually, close. It's not peeps, it's Reed Pops.
Ah. But I see what you did there. Okay, yeah.
But yeah, it's Reed. They're putting on that that machine, that convention as well. I'll be a cog in that wheel.
Nice. Very cool. And give the website one more time.
We have bloodfire.com. So just blood, fire, real easy to spell, and Kindergoth.
Very
spelled
cool.
Exactly as you think.
All right. Well, thanks for your time here at C2E2, and enjoy Sunday.
Enjoy. Thanks.
All right. And maybe more from C2E2 today, if not tomorrow when I'm more awake. And one more to go here at C2E2 Saturday before I wrap things up and move on to Sunday. Mr. Brian Crowley, I'm tripping on my own words, of Hamster Rage is joining us here. Brian, how has your weekend been so far?
It's been pretty great. The books have sold really well. I've sold a couple of the figures. It's been going really, really well. It's been very, very busy for today's Saturday. And it was very good on Friday. And the C2E2 guys have been very excellent in their support of the show and the support of all the creators and Artist Alley and here in the Webcomics Pavilion.
Yeah, no, I've heard nothing but positive things myself as well. Everything seems to be going swimmingly here for a first-year con.
Yeah, absolutely. They have put the best foot forward. They were bringing coffee in the morning for some of the people who came in here to set up.
Nice.
And they've done a great job with this show. The show is the best. Is by far the best show in Chicago I've been to.
Excellent.
And I hope it's the only show in Chicago.
Ooh, you hear that, Seamus? Oh, snap.
Well, you know, I like I said earlier to you, I'm part of Nerd City,
yes.
And we don't hold back.
Uh-huh. So. Yes, as I can tell, and I'm sure by the end of the weekend, you're going to be hearing buzzing in your brain from the tattoo over there.
Yeah, no, actually, one of my friends, she's over there right now getting a Stephen King tattoo on her shoulder. So,
wait, of the man Stephen King?
Of his face
on her shoulder,
which, you know, when she's... When she's 50, I'm sure she won't regret at all.
Because it's going to look like an older Stephen King.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It will be awesome. So, you know, yeah.
All right, very cool. Well, tell the listeners about Hamster Rage.
Hamster Rage is my webcomic I've recently launched. I launched it the week of C2E2. It's it's about a superheroine who is the best superheroine in her respective universe, and her childhood pet, Hamster Roosevelt, comes back into her life and causes all kinds of chaos and all kinds of problems in her life.
Very cool, very cool. So a nice hamster comedy or hamster drama?
What? It's mostly comedy. It's
okay.
Mostly basically what it is it's a chance to take everything I love from when I was in my childhood and bring it into one comic and make fun of it and have fun with it and parody and blah 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 blah
with hamsters
and also Hamster Rage, the title refers to Roosevelt's eventual political blog.
Oh, nice.
And as a political and his career as a political columnist. And it's kind of me saying, are the people that are talking heads on TV kind of all hamsters? Maybe. Is Glenn Beck a hamster? Definitely.
I would certainly say without a shadow of a doubt that Glenn Beck is a frickin' hamster.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, though, hamsters have functioning cerebellums. So
yes,
yeah.
Yes, and And hamsters are better about crapping themselves than Glenn Beck.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I'm sure. I can't wait for all the conservatives on whatever site hear this. Go fuck you, liberal.
Yeah, but to be completely honest, I'm a quote unquote liberal from Brooklyn, New York. I don't think any conservatives will listen to the damn show anyway.
Excellent. That's that'll be great. So
the website just launched and everything's all up and running. Is it going to be a weekly? Is it going to be a daily? What's it going to be?
I'm doing it one a week. It's going to be one page a week. It's a gag on a page per week. And it's got an RSS feed, so you can follow it on the RSS. It's got a Zazzle shop set up. You can buy T-shirts and blah, blah, blah. It's going to have also a link to Indie Planet, so you can go ahead and hop on Indie Planet and go buy the book. By the print books, as the print books come out, and that's it, pretty much.
Very cool. I'd like to buy some blah blah blah.
Yeah, the blah blah blah. I mean, Zazzle is amazing. You've got sneakers, skateboards, ties, coffee mugs. You can make all kinds of stuff.
Partridges, pear trees.
Yes, partridges and pear trees. That's the top seller, actually.
very good to know. Very good to know.
Yeah. The partridges, the family, they sell really well, too.
That's not much of a surprise. Those 60s hippies are everywhere, man.
Well, and unlike the partridges I sell have less drug addiction problems than the partridges from the Partridge family.
Nice.
So,
yeah. All right, give the website out there one more time.
Sure, it's hamsterrage.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Brian J. Crowley. You can also go to Brian J. Crowley, which is my website. It's brianjcrowley.com. I'm on Facebook, and listen to Nerd City, because that's a podcast I'm on every week.
Very cool. All right, well, Brian, thanks for joining us here on Comic Timing, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you very much. It was great talking to you.
Great talking to you as well, and pizza's yummy.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm gonna kill you.
What? I didn't mean it!
And I'll kick you in the nuts if you bring that up on the recording.
He will kick me in the nuts if I bring up anything like that on this recording. You're not going to know what it is because I pressed record directly after he mentioned it. So lucky me, as I have my yearly interview with Mr. Steve Bryan of Athena Voltaire, because I'm probably not going to be at San Diego Comic Con, and I don't even know if you will be. So.
Oh, I will be.
Oh, you will be. Okay, all right. So we'll get it done here at C2E2 instead, a little bit early. All right. How's the weekend been treating you, man, other than the craziness?
It's been a great weekend.
Good.
My voice is about cashed, so I think that's always a good sign for a creator, right?
I would say so, yeah. Usually by the time I interview you on Sunday, you have no voice. So
I know, it sounds like every convention season I'm perpetually going through puberty again. It was so much fun. I'm going to do it again.
You should have heard me at Super Show, man. I mean, I caught like whatever cold was running around. And
I heard you were patient zero.
Yes. No, actually, technically... Sean Pryor, I think, was patient zero. And him hearing this now, he's probably going to kick my ass the next time I say that. But
we love you, Sean.
We love you, buddy. Mr. Lemmy Award winning Sean Pryor, I might add. So, full weekend, awesome in all aspects, nice, happy crowd and all that.
I think so. It's a lot of fun to have a show actually in Chicago proper.
Right.
And as an exhibitor, Reed has just been amazing. To all the creators, so much communication. Mm-hmm. They have great accommodations for everybody. It's just been terrific.
That's happy to hear, actually, because I mean, the main thing about launching a show in Chicago is that it is such a huge city that you've got to sort of like encapsulate everybody.
Well,
you know,
yeah, that's kind of the downside. I mean, the great thing about you've been to the Wizard Chicago show.
This is my first time in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Proper.
Okay.
So I've never been there. I've heard the stories though about how Rosemont's like basically just a convention center and a hotel, and that's
right.
It.
And I mean, the nice thing about a show like that is, you know where everybody's going to be. It's Casablanca. Sooner or later, everybody comes to Rick's. But, you know, in an environment like this, it's cool because everybody gets to see the city. So you may not see everybody that you want to see quite as much. But, you know, I think if you ask Chris Niesman, he could probably tell you a couple things that he likes about Chicago.
No idea what you're talking about. None whatsoever. Well, he gave me breakfast recommendations. He gave me comic shop recommendations. He gave me shoe shine recommendations. You know, I mean, okay, maybe not shoe shines, but...
He's like the mayor. Actually, he's more connected than Rod Blagojevich was here.
Blagojevich!
And actually, I think Chris could actually sell a Senate seat.
You know, he probably could.
He's connected.
He throws some comic books at.
He's not, I'm using air quotes, he's not connected, but he is connected.
Whatever Niesman says goes. We know the deal, all right?
Ian is scratching his chin.
Yes.
For those of you, I'll do the narration for our visuals.
Yeah, I keep forgetting this is an audio podcast.
This is like the worst podcast ever. We're making faces.
I have pants on, I promise. Don't worry, folks.
I can't make that promise.
Oh, God damn it, son of a...
They're not going to invite me back to have another exhibit. I'm putting the exhibition in exhibit.
Nice.
No.
Well,
we're funning you with through the power of audio.
And you were on display at the Wizard Worlds and all that before.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Okay. I've done Wizard World. That used to be the Chicago Comic Con. So
right.
I'm going to have a lot of affection for that because it was my convention growing up.
Right.
But, you know, by the same token, it really feels like C2E2 is... It has a lot of the same feeling of the New York Comic Con, which is
great.
Yeah. And I think it's... They came in and they did, you know, the level of show that Wizard was a few years ago.
Right.
Because Wizard has kind of shifted its focus.
Yeah, they're more of a pop culture show.
Yeah, and this is just a great comic-centric show.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, everybody's out in force, so it's... I'm loving it. It's a wonderful show.
And what's great is they brought literally everything that they started at New York Comic Con here.
Right,
you know, they've got the podcast arena. They've got the stage. They've got the artist alley as big as it was, the webcomics pavilion.
Right.
You know? And it's everything that I adore about the Javits Center, only there's lights.
Right. Yeah, I got to admit, I love... I feel like we're doing commentary, and the camera should pan. We should have a camera panning around.
And now Tiger Woods gets ready for a shot.
I love all the high windows. I love seeing natural light in a convention center.
Definitely. Yeah.
But the downside is it shows just how pasty we are.
Well, my favorite thing is that at the end of the night, when they turn off the lights to tell everybody to get out of here, no one actually knows it's over because
right.
the light's still coming in. It's 6 o'clock, and you basically got to have people shoot people because no, on top. Look,
right.
They're off now. Seriously, get the hell out of here. It's 7 o'clock.
So are you going to be back next year?
I will certainly hope so.
Awesome.
I certainly hope so. I mean, it's the same time next year, basically. It's only a week earlier.
Oh, I didn't even know what the schedule was. I should probably...
Yeah, it's posted in the program book.
That's great.
Yeah, I believe it's the 8th to the 11th, if memory serves.
Okay.
So around the same time, they're trying to, I guess, iron things out here on, like, the fluctuations of New York Comic Con until they finally found a time that worked for them. So
cool. And then New York will settle into...
I believe October.
That's better than doing it in February.
I agree. Yeah.
I loved the show, and you know, I loved seeing New York for the first time when I went to that one. But it was so damn cold.
Oh God!
But I mean, it was cold here too. It's not like I went and went. Oh my gosh, it's so much colder.
Oh,
New York.
This week is deceptive, though. I came in and it was 75, 80. I'm like, man, everything they said about Chicago was wrong. Oh shit!
Yeah, it did turn on us. But you know, doing a show in February in Chicago or New York would just be unfun.
Oh. Nope,
so I'm glad to see we have one in the spring and one in the fall,
mm-hmm.
because I think both areas are kind of pretty temperate around that time.
Definitely.
It doesn't get bitter, at least.
Yeah, and Reed has built a brand for themselves, officially Reed Pop now.
Oh, that's awesome.
All the collection of shows, the PAX East, New York Comic Con, they just bought a show in Singapore, C2E2, and I believe Book Expo is under that umbrella as well, all rebranded as Reed Pop as of this convention.
So you and I are going to go to Reed Pop Singapore next year.
I will be there, and I will not get caned. I'm going to try my best.
I don't believe that. I think you're going to pay to be caned.
All right. You obviously know me too well.
Yes, miss, can I have another? That's Ian.
All right. So is Athena Voltaire, we're getting there. It's on the web for now.
Oh, I feel like I've been apologizing. Honestly, we've had this discussion before about trying to get the book up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what did they say about the definition of insanity? It's doing the same thing over and over and, you know, expecting different results.
Right.
So I finally realized that trying to work on the book in my downtime was... pretty much a futile gesture.
Yeah.
So I tried to rethink some things, and I saw... I'm part of a comic art blog called Comic Twart.
Okay.
We grew out of Twitter. It was Twitter art, and it's Twart.
Yes.
So that's... I think it's comictwart.blogspot.com.
Don't put it Comic Twat. That's something different.
No, that's something different.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm part of a collective art blog with a bunch of great artists,
cool.
and one of them is Mitch Garrett.
Mm-hmm.
And Mitch and his creative partner... Scott Dillon did a Kickstarter campaign for their awesome book, Johnny Recon.
Cool.
And I kind of asked Mitch how it works.
Mm-hmm.
He explained everything about Kickstarter for me. And I thought, well, maybe that's what I can do to get Athena going again. So I know you've heard me say it before, but
yeah.
I'll encapsulate it. The long and short of Kickstarter is it's like doing a PBS telethon, except instead of giving away tote bags and all that kind of stuff,
right.
we're giving away like an exclusive Athena Voltaire hardcover, sketchbooks, original art, new drawings, stuff
right.
like that, with various levels of support. You know, I think like the $10 level is... you get your name in the book, you get access to a behind-the-scenes blog.
Very cool.
And you get PDF copies of the book. And we work all the way up to like a $1,000 bid has a ton of stuff and also two covers. The cover
nice.
Of the Athena Voltaire Black Coat one-shot, the Athena cover and the Black Coat cover.
Awesome.
So, you know, two covers, you get the hardcover, sketches, all kinds of other stuff that if it were not Sunday of the convention, I could probably rattle off.
That's fine. However, right now in my head, I have you in a tux with a microphone going, well, we need your support.
Well,
please, help us here on the PBS telethon.
Exactly.
Yes.
And, you know, in our theater of the mind, we've got Brian Deemer and Chris Niesman and John Suntress all answering phones like a PBS
yes,
pledge.
Yes, of course. And Chris Niesman is there draped over. He was answering calls earlier until he hit the bourbon.
Oh, well, I totally see in our pretend scenario. I see Chris as like Jerry Lewis on like hour 30 of the telethon. You know, he's loosening his collar. Maybe he's about to croon a song. Because you know when Jerry got serious, he'd kind of do the crooning thing like
oh, yeah.
he learned from Dino.
Uh-huh.
I see Chris as kind of the Jerry and Brian Salazar as kind of the Dean. I don't know.
I could see that.
That's just me.
I could definitely see that.
And I guess Tom Caters would be Sinatra.
So how close are we to your goal at this point?
I think right now we're around $6,400 of $7,000.
Oh, that's great.
Although I got to put in the caveat, if we exceed our goal,
yes.
If we exceed our goal, it doesn't mean like I'm going to be swimming naked through a bunch of money.
No. We don't want to see that.
No, nobody wants to see that. But it would just mean that instead of doing a two-issue miniseries, I could fund myself for maybe two issues in a one-shot.
Great.
Or a four-issue series or something like that.
So just all towards more Athena.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
You know, if we hit a bigger number, it just means instead of having like 2 months or 3 months to work on the book, I could work on it for four or five and see what we get done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty encouraging.
Awesome.
Can I give the website? Actually,
yes, you can.
I would prefer it if you did because
okay. there we
you
go.
Know you're kind of good with the spoken thing. I sound like a stuttering chimp.
All right, here we go. In fact, not only that, but I'll kickstart the adventure. AthenaVoltaire.com. Eisner nominated series Athena Voltaire is conducting a fundraising campaign on Kickstarter.com. Learn how you can help and get exclusive sketchbooks, hardcovers, original art, other things, and more in the process. I'll leave you up to imagination what other things are. Check it out at http://, you don't really need that, kck.st/DKER70.
The letter O.
The letter O, not the number O.
By the way, at one point you were almost channeling Gilbert Gottfried.
Thank you!
I know. God, you knew that better than me. I want to hear you say Athena Voltaire, and I want to hear you say Aflac.
Aflac! Athena Voltaire!
You do that frighteningly well.
See, that's why I want to go into the voice acting business, because apparently I have the chops.
I think you do.
Quite frankly.
I think you do.
Well, we all hope it turns out, man. I mean, I've been following it, obviously, since the early days, and I enjoy it, and I enjoy you. Not in that way. Yes, yes. Anything other than Athena that you can pimp out there? Or,
A couple of years ago, I announced a modern pulp thing I was doing with June Bob Kim.
Yeah.
And I know you've talked about June Bob. Have you talked to June also or not? On the show?
I think at least once I saw him in person, I believe, and talked to him, yeah.
So June and I have...
Super Show. There you go.
Yes. All right. June and I have a book called Ursula Wild.
Mm-hmm.
Although, since I'm kind of turning into the guy that names everything after chicks with weird names, we're toying with the idea of calling it Cypher.
Okay.
And June is actually done with the first issue. He's plugging away. We're not going to, you know, put it on a publisher schedule or anything like that until we're done and we can just bang them all out. But I've got that. That's still cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got another pulp title. I'm not going to release any information about it yet.
Yeah.
But
no chick names or anything.
No chick names.
Right.
It takes place in the 30s and the 60s, and it's a lot of fun. and I'll be yammering about that probably in the next 6 months.
That'll be Dakota Danger coming soon.
No, no, no.
Okay, no, no, no.
There's no girl. It's,
all right, all right,
this one has a male lead.
I believe you. I believe you. Oh, okay, fine. I'll believe it when I say it.
Okay, okay, okay.
And where everyone can find your things on the internets?
I am at atomictiki.blogspot.com.
We hope.
Yeah, no, I checked it in my little brain internet.
Just making
sure.
And,
of course, I can be found on Twitter at Steve Bryant Art.
Mm-hmm.
So,
excellent, man.
And I tweet way too much.
And on all the forums that you still frequent.
Good Lord. Oh, I'm ubiquitous. It's frightening.
You're everywhere.
I'm not quite as ubiquitous as you are, though. You're everywhere.
I'm touched, honestly. On the inside, I'm touched right now. On the outside, I'm touched right now. Now I'm scared.
Okay, good to know. Well, quit touching yourself.
Especially in person.
Yes.
Steve, always a pleasure, man. I hope everything works out with the Kickstart, and hope to see more Athena and all that jazz coming soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Ian.
All right, and enjoy the rest of your 5 hours or whatever's left here at C2E2. 3 hours, even. Holy crap. It's 2:22. Less than that, even. Oh, my
okay,
God.
2.5 hours.
2.5 hours. Good
let's
enough.
Let's make some sales.
Sounds good. Sounds good. All right, take it easy, and more from Comic Timer to come. All right, and we're back here at C2E2, and what C2E2, what convention would be complete without talking to some podcasters that I know, like this one that I found here for some reason, Sean Whalen, Raging Bullets. Hi, Sean.
I was hiding under a table, and you found me, so...
He saw me coming, and he ran. I know what the truth is.
I was stuck behind here, though. There's nowhere to go. No, it was good to see you again.
Good to see you as well. How's your weekend look?
You know, this has been really, you know, for a first time outing for a show, this has been really a fun show.
Yeah.
I like the layout. I like that everything's a little bit more spread out. Mm-hmm. It was very easy to circulate everywhere that you wanted to go.
Right.
It was for a first con, I thought the attendance was admirable. I thought we had some, especially Saturday. I thought Saturday had a really good show.
Oh, yeah.
I keep having to tell myself this is a starter con. It just has gotten started, so the buzz isn't really generated yet. The guest list was amazing.
Oh, it's fantastic.
The amount of panels and the diversity of the panels I thought was really great.
Yeah.
And, just a lot of enthusiasm from the people that were there. Our tables got a lot of traffic.
Good.
For podcasts,
great.
Both from creators who wanted to come on and do interviews across comics to, listeners and showgoers. So it was really kind of great.
Comparable foot traffic to New York?
It's kind of hard to tell because New York, everything was so, everything's a lot tighter.
Right.
And I really liked the layout of this one. I would say we were busy all day long,
every day.
I never had a time where there was like downtime. Really.
Yeah. I mean, I came by a couple times and there was always something going on.
There was always
here.
A flow here.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, the location they were very nice to us.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave us what I think is just a great location.
Yeah.
We were right across from the autograph area and right across from Artist Alley.
Mm-hmm.
They were very nice to us, the podcasters.
Mm-hmm.
And kudos to them.
You got to love the aisle space as well. I mean, even on Saturday when it was at its busiest, you could still get through the aisles, you could still get to wherever you needed to go.
And I think it was good for the creators that were here because of our location. They knew we were here and they were able to kind of easily get to us to chat with us and yet get back to the areas that they needed to be at the times that they did. So, it was one of those things where, I really enjoyed this con. I think it was a great con. For a first con, I'll definitely come back next year.
Oh,
which,
sure.
It's a no-brainer. It's not a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
It's an exclamation point.
Right.
So,
and that's
a sign in and of itself.
And it's good to see that they're stable on their show times. Next year is happening like a week before this one did. In the same time as April, so they're officially going to be that April con right at the beginning of the season, which is great.
And last night we went to the evening with Neil Gaiman, which I thought it was so mind-blowingly cool. It was like 3 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he went overtime even because they had the shuttle buses were out there at 9:30 waiting for people to show up, and it ended at 10.
Yeah.
Which, it's easy enough to get out of here once you find out where you're going. So that wasn't so bad, but still, I mean, 3 hours of Gaiman is an amazing experience.
No, and he was so enthusiastic. And that's honestly something I will say of all the creators that were here at C2E2 was the enthusiasm.
I mean,
just everyone was smiling. Everyone was very gracious. Whether they were at a panel and, there were some panels I was at where creators were dealing with criticism of their work. And
James Robinson.
Yeah, and I thought James Robinson handled himself with a ton of class at this con because, really with, Cry for Justice and all that, he was blasted by a couple of people. And I thought he really came back, rather than dodging it, he dealt with the questions. And I just had, my respect level for him was high before. It's even higher now after how he handled himself here.
Yeah.
I thought was just a great con.
I agree with that as well.
Did you have something favorite at the con yourself?
The gaming is up there, actually, as one of my favorite moments. Although, I think probably my favorite moment was, even though there was a little bit something, messed up about it, there was an error, but winning that Blackest Night number 8.
Oh, yeah.
It was due to DC's own error, but they were nice enough to still give people gifts.
Yeah.
Which was great.
Rather than making a mistake and saying, oops, we made a mistake, they took care of everybody,
right.
which I think that's classic.
Yeah, and I worked along the floor. I had some people, saw some people that were selling it for $60. And I mean, that's a pretty pricey thing right there. That and also found I Hate Gallant Girl, an Image series that came out a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Chris was missing issue 2 for the longest time. And I saw someone who was just packing up their stuff who happened to be selling the trade. And I bought that along with one of the other ones for $20.
For anybody that hasn't been at a con before, I'm going to encourage you, when you come to a con, make sure you go to panels.
Yes.
Because I think that's one of the experiences of cons. Get everything signed, meet the creators and all mm-hmm. that. You've got to do that. And make sure you talk to the creators when you do that.
Oh, definitely.
But besides that, I'm amazed at how many people I talk to that don't stop by panels.
Right.
And to me, that's one of the highlights of the convention is to be able to, whether it's a smaller panel or to the large mm-hmm. whole room panels put on by the big two or something.
Sure.
It's great the amount of interactivity you have at those panels, because usually most of them have a Q&A, mm-hmm. which is great. You get a chance to actually get your thoughts out there.
Yeah.
But they also, it's great to be there with them as they're introducing things that we're going to be reading over the next year.
Right.
And get kind of excited. And because half the fun for me is I leave here speculating where my books are going.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's a fun part of the con.
Sometimes you can tell what's going to happen next by what they don't answer.
Yes.
You know, because if they have that like nervous look on their face and they're looking around at the person next to them, like,
I also like, though, when I'm wrong.
Right.
Because that's always fun, too, because you think you've headed in one direction, and they do something that makes so much sense that has totally swerved you. And it's fun, though. You get that experience because you've been here at the panels. Yeah, it's great to read the news on the websites and all that. And I actually do, after I've been to a panel, I like going back and reading the news, just because if I'm focused on one thing, I might have missed a little comment that they made or something.
Yeah.
So I'm, the Newsarama I'll go to, and CBR and things like that, and comic-related to see what their thoughts. But it's fun, to me, when I'm at those panels, to just get into the enthusiasm of the creators, because you're actually there one-on-one with them.
Right.
Which is, not one-on-one with them, but you're in a whole group.
Well, sure, yeah.
Where you get to see them and how excited they are.
Yeah, and you get to see them in their natural element, just mingling amongst fans, but people that are interested in their work and want to ask them questions. And that's a great thing to have. It really is.
Do you have a favorite comic that's coming out in the next year that they've announced?
Favorite comic that's coming out in the next year that they announced? Actually, Young Allies. With Sean McKeever.
Nice.
Gravity, a member of the team.
Oh, cool.
So that's really nice. So that's Sean McKeever back on Marvel with Nomad, Aranya, I believe Gravity. Yeah, well, Gravity, as I said, and there's one or two other characters that I'm not entirely familiar with. Firestar's going to be on the team.
Cool.
And one other character that I believe knew that he's
creating. I like Aranya quite a bit, too. I got into that when CGS did the Digest.
Yeah.
It, I got into that mm-hmm. character from, reading the Digest as part of their Book of the Month.
And she's been in the backups for Nomad recently.
Yeah, so she's a cool character. So it's I'm excited to see that. And Gravity, of course, I've always liked. But that's going to be neat to have that team aspect come in.
Definitely.
That's a good use for those characters, because those are characters that I think that's a way to spotlight them mm-hmm. and get people into them.
Sure. And your favorite upcoming comic?
The Birds of Prey.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
There's no surprise there.
Yeah. They're characters that I've been missing. When Lady Blackhawk was recently in Batman Confidential, mm-hmm. I was so glad to just see her.
Right.
And I think that they're characters that are stronger together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they bring out the best in each other.
Right.
In the way that they're having Gail Simone loves those characters.
Of course.
She's going to... It's going to be a badass book.
And seeing Ed Bennis back on the book.
Yeah.
It's bringing a team back together.
Well, and I actually think the time away from the book is actually going to be good for the book, because the DC Universe has changed so much.
Right.
That I think that's just going to be a fabulous book to read.
And I think Bennis' art style has actually improved since he was on Birds of Prey.
Oh, I think so too, yeah.
And it'll be nice to see his more refined style on a book like Birds of Prey.
And it's a bat book now, which is interesting to see them reacting to the changing bat universe.
Right.
So much has changed in that world. And I think it's all the more exciting because of it. Hawk and Dove, really intriguing.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a bat book with a hawk.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, I'll take any kind of hawk I can get. But it's, I think he is going to add a wild dynamic, because there's some feisty women on that team.
Mm-hmm. first male element introduced to Birds of Prey officially. Because, I mean, I know Nightwing was in on a few missions
and
back in the early days.
Characters and like that were in there. But you're right, officially being on... They were operatives for them, but they weren't, like, in your face officially on the team, and this is going to be interesting.
I would agree with that as well. You pick up anything good? Any purchases or anything? Or
You know, I did... The Dangerous Alphabet from Neil Gaiman.
Oh, cool.
I got that at because it was part of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. And ended up picking that up. Mm-hmm. A lot of independents, as we're going through. A lot of independent creators who we've chatted with here, actually. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of their materials that I'm actually interested to read as far as things that are new. I didn't, you know, as far as shopping, I got a Doctor Who Sonic Screwdriver.
Ooh, the new one?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I'm a big fan of the new series. I've seen the first two episodes.
Yeah.
And Matt Smith is just absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, I can't wait to get home and watch the third, honestly.
Yeah. It's one of those series that I was really worried when David Tennant was leaving because of how much I liked him. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the first episode of that, I think, has every bit as engaging as Christopher Eccleston's first episode, Rose. I think it's got that same kind of energy and vibe.
Right.
And they totally... Once again, third time around, they revitalized me again on a series that I've loved since my childhood.
Well, Moffat has written some of my favorite episodes of Doctor Who as well. I had high regard for him in the first place. It's nice to see him directing.
Matt Smith's a winner, though. Matt Smith is really a testament to his acting, and the companion's great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a win-win. Amy Pond.
I wound up with the one issue that I'll recommend you guys cover at some point on the show. Uh-huh. I finally picked up the one issue of the Our Man DC 1 Million three-parter that I was missing. And DC 1 Million, the trade. I'd love to see you guys cover that at some point. That's one of Grant Morrison's early
DC 1 Million I'd love to do.
Yeah.
I loved that series when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something that came out, obviously, before we were podcasting.
Right.
And I know Jim hasn't read it, so I would love to do DC 1. There's so many
books. Of course,
I want to get to.
I mean this will be 5 years from now, for all I know. But it's great because it's one of Grant Morrison's early crossovers that he did for DC.
When we were talking with Peter Rios about that we're going to be doing in the next... couple of months with the relaunch of Green Arrow, I want to do a Longbow Hunters by Mike Grell. Because I think with so much with the direction they're heading into with Green Arrow, which is a book I'm very excited about right now. I think the relaunch of Green Arrow is going to be very cool.
They're going to have to convince me a little bit because I'm a little bit more on the negative side when it came to the Holy Ann and Arsenal thing. But
have you read the most recent issue?
Not the most recent. No, I read the
issue.
First part of the fall with Green Arrow.
Read the most recent issue. It takes a major turn because of the cliffhanger, the last issue. I don't want to ruin it for you.
That's fine.
I'll just say that cliffhanger, the last issue, is very critical to where it's going.
Okay. We only have one issue of the Arsenal that's out so far, though, right? That one, I'm more worried about that than I am anything else, because after that first issue, it put me in a dark place a little bit. I'm hoping that Roy turns out on top once this is all said and done, and he's not back to that darker place that he was in DC Comics a while ago. But it's going to be tough.
I think it's going to be real interesting.
Yeah.
Something I talked about on our show that I think is interesting, and I don't know, this is a possibility that, and it's purely me wondering what if.
Right.
There's a guy running around with a white ring.
Uh-huh.
Are the returns from the dead done?
Well, Jeff Johns has been saying dead means dead. At all the panels.
Except they brought back a bird.
You're right. Yeah. And
the other thing is, too, though, there is somebody... Did you read Brightest Day Zero?
It's actually waiting for me at home.
Okay.
Yeah. I did read, like, about half the issue, though, so I know the basics.
Yeah. At the end of Blackest Night number 8, Dead Man's running around with a white ring.
Yes.
And because he's running around with a white ring, it gives him the power of life.
Yes.
So, I don't know. I guess I'm kind of wondering, is Arsenal's daughter really permanently dead?
I don't know. I mean, I'd rather him just go to that pit that Captain Boomerang Jr. wound up in and just bring him back for my sake.
I don't see... you know what? The funny thing is with Digger back, I don't see that happening.
Yeah, I know. Which is a shame because he's still got that unresolved... he's Bart's half-brother. That was never resolved.
Right.
And I would have loved to have seen something with that, but that was a plot point that just... went to the wayside.
That
happens, though.
Yeah.
You know?
If they have a use for Captain Boomerang Jr., one of the great things is they can always bring him back.
Yes, that is true. They can always bring him back.
Not according to Jeff Johns.
Dead means dead.
That's what he said.
When did he say dead means dead?
They explained at the Green Lantern Flash panel when someone asked that if everyone who returned from the dead was because Necron willed it so, and Jeff's like, yeah, the door is closed on that now, if you believe him.
I still am a firm believer that that may be the way that they're heading for right now, temporarily. Anytime you have a good story idea where it's worth bringing a character back, there's no way they're going to say, hey, we got a moneymaker here.
Yeah, come on.
But we said dead is dead. So they're not going to do that. That's not good comics. Yeah,
it's frickin' comic books. There's no such thing as dead means dead, okay? They might say it now, but not later.
Yeah. I guess I'm kind of a minority in because a lot of people seem to be clamoring for this dead means dead. I'm kind of like, why do we need that edict? I don't see what the point of that is.
I prefer dead means dead because it makes the death have meaning. But if I... You know my feelings on this. If it's a crappy death to begin with, I don't care if they bring them back.
Yeah. Well, that's why I was actually sort of torn when they brought Colossus back, because I thought that was a very powerful death that meant a lot for the X-Men.
Astonishing X-Men was brilliant.
It was great. I just think it could have been great without Colossus.
And what happened with Kitty Pryde wouldn't have meant as much if Colossus wasn't back.
Yeah.
So there was some story. And, I mean, his use since then.
Right.
Has been really great.
That's
where, to me, you don't bring a character back unless you're doing Colossus is actually a great example of that's why you bring a character back.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, there's been times where they brought characters back and, like, yes, it was for shock value and it went nowhere. And I'm not a fan of shock value deaths.
Right.
I'm not a fan of shock value returns.
Yes.
Those are the ones where it's just these isolated moments and there was no point to them.
Right.
Death should mean something.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to kill a character, there should be long-term ramifications, and it should mean something to the character as well.
I'm feeling Barry.
Yeah.
I'm like, Barry died so long ago, and the fact that his death is referenced in crappy Eddie Murphy movies, I don't know if you know about that.
Oh, yeah.
No, that was great. Daddy Daycare.
Right.
Yeah. Agree?
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Exactly.
And I usually don't agree blindly, especially with you two involved.
Oh, this one you'll agree with.
Agree?
What the heck? I'll agree.
Yay!
What do I agree to?
You think I'm going to tell you?
Yeah.
you agree that wrestlers with pants are goofy.
Okay.
Live with it, Jim. It happened. Yeah.
You're number one. You're number one. That's all I got to say.
Kwan. How's your weekend been? How's your con experience been, Jim?
This has been an amazing one. This has been a very fun, time, and I'm really loving that we came here and looking forward to next year.
It's great having a con like this taking place in, well, not exactly the heart of the city, but close to the heart of the city, where you get to really experience Chicago as a whole, as opposed to Rosemont, where you're in a suburb, and it's basically just the convention and the hotel. You know, while this one.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot closer.
Definitely. And it's, Chicago is an amazing city and got to get a little bit of the taste for the city, this time. Who knows? Maybe next time get a little bit more images.
Taste of the pizza.
Yeah. A little bit more than the pizza. Just the actual personality of the city. So it's kind of neat.
We got to experience Chicago humor.
Yes. Got to experience Chicago humor.
Yeah, which I now realize is what happens when people watch The Daily Show and Saturday Night Live and aren't from New York.
Yeah.
Because half the jokes go over the head.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to verse myself on Chicago politics for the next time I'm here.
Blagojevich!
Whitey! Freaking Jerry Lewis. You pick up anything here? You pick up any books or anything? Or?
I got the Longbow Hunter.
Nice.
Got Irredeemable.
Awesome.
The two trades. That's really all the stuff I actually got.
Yeah.
A couple free comics from the various people.
Nice.
One independent that looks really, really good. It's Yi Su Shin.
Mm-hmm.
It's about it's feudal Korea.
Uh-huh.
It's the invasion by Japan.
Oh, cool.
Of Korea.
Nice.
And it's, a historical fiction work. That is actually, I'm looking at it. It was beautiful red.
Mm-hmm.
The talking to the creator is very passionate about it. Mm-hmm. It was just something I'm really looking forward to read.
Cool. Awesome.
Titan Books came over and chatted with us, and they have a Jim Lee book that's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Really comprehensive, looking at his career. A lot of material that hasn't been published before, and it's going to go straight up through his upcoming Legion.
Oh, very nice.
It's going to be coming up.
Nice.
So it's going to be something that's going to be very current, very comprehensive for Jim Lee fans.
Uh-huh.
It's titanbooks.com, but they're also doing a lot of reprints of previously unseen before and unreprinted before, Joe Simon and Jack Kirby material.
Wow.
Including, they've got a 481-page, I think.
Oh, wow.
Book coming out that's going to be under $50, completely remastered artwork.
That's fantastic.
You know, just in the vein of like the illustrated, the Batman illustrated by Neil Adams. You know how that was remastered.
Right, right.
That was published by DC, but this is being published by Titans Books, and it's material that for a lot of us, I'm getting very into Simon and Kirby by the reprints that DC's been doing lately. Mm-hmm. Titans now taking some of the characters that are lesser known from Simon and Kirby, and gathering all that material together, including unpublished material by them.
Great.
That which to me, the historical aspect of that, especially that they're remastering it, and they have Simon involved in this.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, it's kind of cool. But their site, I was going through there, and TitanBooks.com has just a whole bunch of really cool stuff from a variety of different comic genres, and each of the books are crafted individually to the project. So it's not like they have one format; they change up the format in a way that fits. So the Jim Lee one is at the top of my list because I'm a big fan of Jim Lee's artwork and I've enjoyed it throughout his career, and I'm also a big fan of artist studies where we get to see where they were at the beginning and how they've grown along the way and why they've grown along the way. What was it about their history? And that's what this book's going to be all about, so it's very cool.
Jim Lee, where are you now?
Yeah, there you go.
But did you hear about the Kirby one that they're working on, the animated universe that Kirby worked on? I don't even know when he worked on it, but what they're doing is they're taking these unused characters and they're going to be making comic books with them.
Right.
I believe Alex Ross is involved with it, and possibly Robert Kirkman, if memory serves.
Yeah.
And they're going to be just creating a whole universe out of something that wasn't actually there before, all based on these Kirby characters that never really had been realized before.
And I think that's great. I mean, it's these were great character ideas at the time, and these characters, when they're reworked and, you know, modernized, the core concepts of the characters were so cool because of how visionary these creators were.
Right.
So it'll be great to see those characters, you know, and Kirkman, I love his stuff. So.
Oh, yeah.
You know, anything that he's involved with, I'm going to check out just because he's involved with it.
Yeah.
Invincible's fantastic. Walking Dead's great.
Mm-hmm.
Even the stuff that he's been doing for Pilot Season for Top Cow has been
good. Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Jim, favorite moment of the con?
Well, I just got out of the Superman panel, which is Superman up, up, and away, and talking about the future of Superman. And they ended the panel. They said, first off, before we show you this image, this is not an alternate Earth. This is not a dream sequence.
Okay.
And we will not answer any questions about it.
Okay.
And the image was Lois Lane pregnant.
Whoa. They went there.
Gotcha.
I hate you. Yeah. How about that scene where you saw Bruce Wayne sitting in the diner in Superman Returns? Wasn't that amazing, you bastard?
That was awesome. You saw me doing that, right? You knew I was doing that to you.
You bastard.
Actually, seriously, I just took part in an experiment that they're doing, and there's probably going to be more of it coming up in the future.
Got him pregnant.
No. It was
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It was an artist. It was really an artist panel. They had a couple artists there with one of those projector images, and they were sketching Batman, and they were going through their process of drawing Batman and talking about the process of Batman.
Very cool.
And it was a very neat, interesting panel. Seeing, it was David Finch was there, Dustin.
Dustin Nguyen,
Jim Calfiore, Rachel, an inker.
Dodson?
No, not Dodson. Buckman.
Okay.
She was there, and they were just going through and, you know, sketching out the Batman, and it was a really neat panel just showing you up front, you know, just as they're building it, you know.
Very cool.
Definitely, they said this is going to be something that we're going to see in other cons, you know, so getting the artists involved in the panels again.
That sounds really, really fun. Yeah, definitely.
They changed the Superman panel to that.
Oh. Well, darn.
What do you guys think about the creative teams of Superman, the changes that are going on there? Paul Cornell, I don't know how familiar you guys are with
Paul. Oh, I love Paul Cornell's work.
I've loved him since he's been writing Doctor Who novels.
Mm-hmm.
Bernice Summerfield was an amazing character there. His Marvel work's been great. The Wisdom miniseries in particular, I really
enjoyed.
But him taking over Superman, I think, is going to be great. JMS.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Action JMS on Action Comics? Do I have that right, or am I reversing it? I think I'm reversing it. JMS on Superman and Paul Cornell on Action Comics, because he's taking over for Guggenheim.
Yes.
I'm very excited for it's going to go. And Sterling Gates and Jamal Igel on Supergirl, I think, has just been stellar.
Yeah.
That book is... And James Robinson at one of the panels I was at yesterday was just talking about how Sterling Gates has some amazingly cool things he's got planned for Supergirl post all of the new Krypton stuff.
Right,
so
right.
It's going to be great to see where that character goes.
I'm looking forward to it. I've been enjoying the Superman books as they are right now with Rucka and with Robinson and all that. I'm very curious to see how they're going to build upon that and really keep the books flowing, keep them interesting after this is all done. Because, I mean, yeah, you've had this storyline working now for, what, 2 years?
Yeah.
And it finally comes to fruition. What's Superman going to be like after this? It's going to be really interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah, a couple of us stayed back after the thing was done to talk to Ian Sadler about the Superman. And we just had just throwing out general questions and comments and whatnot to him. And one of the things he did talk about was the War of Superman. Mm-hmm. He said that's just going to be this epic, unbelievable, pure action-packed battle sequence. Mm-hmm. And they're going to do stuff that we're not going to see coming. There's going to be a lot of whoa moments. And, you know, it's looking forward to seeing that. And I did ask him about Supergirl, and he's like, oh, yeah, they love that creative team. I even specifically said, I'm loving Jamal's work on it. Like, oh, yeah, so are they. So it's a nice, cool thing seeing nice consistency going through there. And he really talked up JMS's stuff. He's like, I've read his stuff.
Nice.
I know what he's going to do with this. And there's some amazing stuff coming down.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. Most of JMS's stuff I've enjoyed in the past, so I'm sure this is going to be right up there with it, no question. Sean, you want to tell people real quick what's coming up on Raging Bullets?
Well, we're doing our C2E2 shows right now.
Yeah.
Just a lot of recording from here.
No idea why you'd be doing something like
that.
Yeah,
exactly. A lot of talking about the DC panels, but more than just kind of regurgitating what we've been talking about here, it's talking about our speculation. What do we think these things that they've announced at the panel mean for the future? That, to me, is far more interesting. That's what we all talk about as we walk out of there anyway.
Right.
So that's the focus of the episodes. We have a 2-hour interview with Jamal Igel that we did prior to the con.
Very cool.
In lieu of doing one here, because it was, we could get him on for a more extensive amount of time.
Yeah.
And we talk about Supergirl, his work, and his creative process on putting together the art. We focused heavily on issue 50, which was that double-sized one that he worked on, and somewhat on issue 51. But what it's been like to work with Sterling Gates, especially with now that he's been on Supergirl for so long.
Right.
You know, how has his art style changed, and what does he love about the character? So that's very cool.
Very awesome.
And then JLA Avengers. We actually have the first part of that already in the can. That's going to be released after all the C2E2 stuff. So we did our first part of that. This is going to be big because we're going heavily into it. And with those being double-sized issues, our first part covers the first issue.
your first Marvel Bullets.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's actually fun on our show because it's the first time we've casually talked about Marvel characters along. But this is with our first time in the history of the show, we get to talk in depth about Marvel characters. And I love Marvel characters, so it's really great to have that opportunity to talk about what I enjoy so much about that universe as well.
Well, very cool. I've got my own Jamal Igel interview from Super Show that'll eventually come out where I'm half horse and somewhat dead. So I'm sure yours will be a little bit more...
You're half horse?
Yeah. Yes, I am. I'm actually bad horse, to be exact. But Sean, thanks for joining us here on Comic Timing. And enjoy your trip home. I hope it's nice and uneventful. And you get back to Ohio in one piece.
Oh, I guarantee you there'll be some event along the way. There always is.
And Jim, you'll always be my commander of Quo.
See you, man. Take it easy.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
You think I know?
Snake, answer me! Snake!
Okay, C2E2 winds down here, and I am with a man who likes to draw Hello Kitty in compromising superhero positions. That's right. Introduce yourself to the crowd.
Hey, everybody. I'm illustrator Tom Kelly. If you're ever at a con, not a Sally, I'm the guy drawing the superhero Hello Kitties.
So what gave you the concept, Tom? I mean, what made you decide this is exactly what I need to do with my art?
Well, you know, the funny thing is it really just sort of happened by accident. 1 year, maybe like 5 years ago, I was at a con. And my table mate next to me, he had a little daughter with him, and we were drawing sketches. I had a bit of block open, and he's like, "Oh, Tom will draw you a sketch. What do you want?" And she's like, "Oh, Hello Kitty." And he's like, "Oh, you gotta have her something for the con." So I started drawing Hello Kitty Batgirl. As I was doing that, I had 10 people come up going, "Oh, I want that one," you know. I was like, yeah, on paper it shouldn't work, but in practical reality, yeah, they're very, very popular.
Horrible pun time. On paper it shouldn't work, but on cardboard.
Oh, yeah. Then it's genius.
You see what I did? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of people come up like, oh, cardboard, that's great. You know, that's recycling. That's, you know, environmentally sound. You know, that the way the color pops out, it's great. Like, yeah, I mean, all those reasons. Plus, you know, it's very cheap and easy for me to get. I get them from, like, grocery stores and electronic stores. I even have people now giving me their cardboard. It's great.
It's like whatever's left over at a show.
Oh, yeah, or, like, there people will buy stuff and, like, you know, they always send me, like, I work at this company and they send me in packing tons of cardboard. I can give it right to you, and which is cool. That's great, you know, because it makes it easy and affordable for people to get a sketch at a con.
You very know? Cool, very cool. So what else other than Hello Kitty do you do?
Well, right now I do a webcomic. It's called The Sword of the Savage Samurai. It's on Webcomic Nation. It's a wandering samurai who happens to also be a werewolf and basically fights monsters. He sort of wanders the earth and cracks heads, pretty much.
I must say it's the first time I've ever heard of the concept of a samurai werewolf, so you are breaking ground there.
I try to do. I mean, I just try to blend the two things I like, sort of ninjas and samurais and swords and monsters. I'm a big monster guy, so, you know.
Monsters, delicious. And where can people find us?
It's up on Webcomic Nation. I also have links on my DeviantArt site. That's Tom9, TOMMM9 at DeviantArt.com. I also have a blog spot called Art Mercenary, which is a process blog.
Oh, cool.
That you can see how I make all my pages and illustrations and stuff.
And Hello Kitty.
Yes, and Hello Kitty.
Well, thanks for joining us here, Tom, and I hope you enjoyed your weekend.
Oh, yeah, it was a great time. I hope you guys enjoyed your weekend.
It was mighty kick-ass, and I'm not just quoting a movie.
All right.
All right, and more from C2E2, maybe. All right, and as the con gets ready to close here, I'm here with X-Factor writer Peter David. Peter, how'd you enjoy your weekend here in Chicago?
It's been great. People have been uniformly friendly, polite, helpful. It's been really terrific here. I've had an absolutely great time in the Windy City.
Fantastic, and I see you got a little bit of face paint there.
Yeah, in the spirit of mutant solidarity, and also because we were about to have an X-Men panel, the nice gentleman over here painted an M on my face.
Very, very cool, in solidarity of Mr. Multiple Man and his
Right, to be at one with my character.
Now, with X-Factor now, a couple changes have happened in the past few months. Yep. They're back in New York. They're getting themselves more involved in the superhero community again.
Yes.
What made you decide to get them, I guess, back in the swing of things, as it were, get them back into the whole superhero mold?
Truthfully, the concept was something that the new editor, Jody Leop, came up with. He said, what would you think of having them, you know, become more entrenched in the Marvel Universe? And once he suggested it, I started to warm to the idea, because I remember the days in Marvel Comics where whenever you got into a taxi cab, you know, Jake Lockley, Moon Knight, was driving the cab.
Right.
Whenever you needed a lawyer, you got Matt Murdock. Contract law, criminal law, civil procedure, didn't matter. Mm-hmm. It was always Matt Murdock.
Right.
So I like the notion of X-Factor becoming the go-to detective agency for the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, if another book wants to do a guest factor appearance where they're hired, that would be terrific with me. I would like to see that sort of visibility for the group.
It would basically just increase their standing in the Marvel U.
Yeah, yes, I absolutely think that it would.
Here, let me get your stuff here.
Okay. There you are.
Thank you.
No problem.
A couple other questions. One I didn't want to bring up at the panel, but I wanted to bring it to you.
Sure.
You know, I think they should do something with the minority that they have in the mutant universe.
Okay.
That's not addressed, the huge minority, which is all the depowered people. You're the only one doing anything.
Well, yeah, when we did the depowered mutant town, yeah.
Yeah. They need to do something. I mean, because you got to...
Well, keep in mind, we've had depowered mutants hire X-Factor.
Yeah.
I mean, whether other folks are going to do anything with it, I have absolutely no idea.
That's what I'm saying. They should. Because that's a, like, I mean, I'm black. I can't stop being black.
Right.
There's no more blacks.
And, right.
You know, now I'm an ex-black.
Oh, my God,
person.
Don't give the Scarlet Witch ideas.
Right. Exactly. But you know what I'm saying? That's a unique group that I have.
Right, now I'm thinking of Mel Brooks doing a version of the Marvel Universe going, no more Schwatzes, immediately.
Yeah, that was a good movie. Of which?
Right, because I'm thinking about the Indians.
Yeah.
Schwatzes! They're darker than us!
Yeah, I'm still
Boy, my wine's going to weird places at the end of the convention.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
and watching History of the World Part 1.
Part 1.
Yeah. And the other thing.
Jews in space.
Yeah. What's up with the next New Frontier? What you got?
I'm working on it right now. Well, not right now. I'm talking to you guys. Right. But I'm working on it right now. It should be coming out spring of next year.
Okay, good. That's, you got the best captain of all.
Thank you.
And I love your work on it. When you do the comics, when you do the novels, everything. Everything
I appreciate
you do
that.
With it. You know.
Okay, so what Marvel superheroes can we expect to see in X-Factor in the next couple of months you'd be willing to reveal?
Okay, the Marvel superheroes, I really don't want to reveal any.
That's fine.
I'd rather it be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
All I will tell you is that in 207, they're a very highly recognizable villainous in the Marvel Universe.
Excellent.
Will be showing up to hire them. And in somewhere around issue 211, mm-hmm. one of the major heavy hitters of Marvel superhero-dom mm-hmm. is going to be showing up.
Okay, cool. And the lineup for X-Factor at this point is pretty much set, other than Layla eventually returning.
Layla and Shatterstar will be returning during the course of the Second Coming crossover.
Very cool, very cool. And anything new on the Fallen Angel front?
Yeah. IDW Comics is collecting, for the first time, the entire DC run.
Okay, cool.
Because a lot of people have asked me over the years, when is DC going to collect the rest of Fallen Angel?
Right.
And the answer is never, but all the rights have reverted to myself and Dave Lopez.
Fantastic.
So IDW snapped up the production materials and are putting out basically a Fallen Angel Omnibus Zero.
Cool.
Which will have the entire DC run in one place for the first time.
Great, great, great. And new materials somewhere down the line?
Yes, or? Absolutely.
Okay.
There's going to be another limited series called Return of the Sun.
Okay.
We just decided we're going to be doing it in series of limited series because it gives the artist J.K. Woodward, you know, more time to breathe in terms of drawing the book.
Oh, sure. And I'm happy to see J.K. remaining on the book because
yes.
he gives the book such a wonderful feeling.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Any other projects you'd like to mention real quick? Or
I have a new project coming out from Boom Comics that I'm doing in conjunction with Claudio Sanchez, lead singer of the progressive rock group Coheed and Cambria.
Oh, cool.
That's set in this big, sprawling science fiction epic universe of his. So that's going to be pretty nifty.
Nice, nice.
And Dark Tower, we're going to be returning for another 30-issue run, which I'm very excited about.
Well, fantastic. And as the show runs down, let me get your website out there.
www.peterdavid.net. Not peterdavid.com, which is a Cloisonne athletic pin manufacturer. peterdavid.net.
I think there's a little bit of a difference there. So .net. .net. Okay, well, thanks for joining us here, Peter, and safe trip home.
Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of what remains of your day.
Thank you very much, and I think we're done here at C2E2. All right, hope you guys had a good time with the interviews, and hope you guys enjoyed everything that was said and done in this episode. Once again, we are sponsored by DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service. Make sure to use the promo code CT8. As you check out, if you are a first-time user of the site, and you will get 8% off of your first order with DCBS. 8% off. Just think about that. 8% off. Almost pretty damn close to 10% off. But it's not 10%, it's 8%. But still, that's a really, really good deal. Discount Comic Book Service. Check it out. And our picks for the month, the Review Corner picks, are Superman number 701, written by J. Michael Straczynski with art by Eddie Barros. This one's 40% off for $1.79, regular price of $2.99. X-Men number 1, written by Victor Gishor, penciled by Paco Medina. This one's 75% off for only 99 cents out of Marvel this month. And True Blood number 1 out of IDW is our indie pick. 50% off, only $1.99. This one is scripted by Alan Ball with writings by David Tishman of Bite Club and Maria Huner. And David Messina of Star Trek Countdown is on the art. And a lot more deals than that can be found at DCBS. I know Solar is 75% off this month for only 87 cents. Chew the Omnivore Edition Volume 1, 50% off for $17.49. American Vampire Volume 1 is only $12.49. So many good deals to be found at DCBS, and I hope you guys take advantage of that because they are a wonderful, wonderful company, and I'm so happy to have them as part of the Comic Timing family, and I'm happy to be part of their family too because they do a lot of great stuff for podcasts, not just this one, but for a bunch more. So check it out, DCBS. ccbservice.com, CT8, 8% off on your first order. And one more reminder, yet again, if you are not ordering Agents of Cult from PKD Media, there is something wrong with you, and you should have your head examined, because this is a really good deal that Sean Pryor is putting together this month, because not only do you get Agents of Cult, but if you order it, if you pre-order it from the site, from DCBS, you will get a free head sketch by Andrew Charapar to go along with it. I highly recommend it. 72 pages of fun. If you like G.I. Joe and Flash Gordon, you're going to love Agents of Cult, and you should definitely give this a shot if you have room on your order. And even if you don't, make room, because you're gonna be happy at the end. I know it's going to happen. So check it out and support Sean Pryor. He's been on Comic Timing 405 times. I'm sure he'll be on 405 times more. And check out his podcast, too, at pkdmedia.com. And that's about all I have to say here. Once again, a reminder that 107 is going to be a review corner, and then after that, 108 will probably wind up being Iron Man 2 and Kick-Ass once we work out the kinks on when we're going to record that episode. Hoping to have Alec Berry on the episode as well, so we're working on around his and Brent's schedule for that, and once we know exactly what's going to go on, we'll let you know, and 108 will be out there, and you'll be listening to it and hopefully enjoying it as much as I did. I just saw Iron Man 2 for the second time today, and ooh, it's so good, so good, so good. But I'll talk more about it later. And that's about it. So remember that the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com, graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. I know we got one back in, I believe, late March, so thank you very much for that. But come on, let us know what you think about the show. I know you're listening out there, and let me know what you think, positive or negative, about the show. Tell us we never come out. You know, tell us the release schedule was crazy. Tell us I say basically too often. I don't care. Just let people know what you think about the show, and that'll make me very, very happy. And it'll make Britt happy too. Probably. All right. It'll make him happy. And as always, there's always time for comics. Recording yet, and I'm being funny. What the hell? I'm only allowed to be amusing when I'm recording.
Exactly.
That's the rule. All right, and I, of course, I've called my, let me try it again.